reasonable tax return preparation? Visit One Day Income Tax Service, 885 Broadway Avenue, Seaside, or call 394-8010. That's 831-394-8010. One Day Income Tax Service, where you walk in with a copy of your most recent tax return, personal ID, and W-2 1099 info for 2006, and you walk out with your completed tax return.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. The pet food recall expanded.
Menu Foods has now recalled all products on its list, regardless of the date produced, from all retail outlets.
Dr. Steven Sunloff of the FDA. Menu Foods, the manufacturer of the pet food that's blamed for at least 14 deaths of cats and dogs, a toxin used in rat poison determined to be the culprit.
How did this substance get into our products? At this stage, we don't know.
Paul Henderson, president of Menu Foods.
At this time, we have no reason to suspect the matter goes beyond the recalled product.
California health officials say they've traced the roots of that E. coli outbreak involving tainted spinach to a San Benito County ranch, at least Land Mission Organics. The ranch was located near that spinach field. Three people died. More than 200 got sick from the bad spinach. It passed with few votes to spare the $124 billion war spending bill that now requires the troops to come home from Iraq by September of next year.
The narrow House vote sets the stage for a major battle over war funding. Democrats like Mike Honda saying the money has to come with a deadline for troop withdrawal.
I voted against the war and I want our troops out now.
Republicans like Sam Johnson said Congress shouldn't interfere with the president's war power.
Literally, this bill forces our guys on the ground to fight a war with one arm tied behind their backs. That just smacks of defeat.
The Senate will soon take up a similar bill to the one the House passed, providing money for the war, but only if there's a date certain to end it. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
President Bush wasting no time repeating his pledge to veto the bill.
They set rigid restrictions that require an army of lawyers to interpret. They set an arbitrary date for withdrawal without regard for conditions on the ground. And they tacked on billions for pet projects that have nothing to do with winning the war on terror.
Naval forces of Iran's hardline Revolutionary Guards capturing 15 British sailors and Marines at gunpoint in the Persian Gulf. The Brits were boarding a merchant vessel in Iraqi waters. Commodore Nick Lambert is the captain of the HMS Cornwall.
This was a normal routine boarding. It took place fairly early this morning under the instructions of the Iraqi government to patrol on their behalf, their territorial waters.
Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad canceling his trip to New York to address the UN Security Council before a vote on whether to impose further sanctions against his country for refusing to stop enriching uranium. Iran's mission at the UN says the U.S. did not deliver a visa in time for the Iranian president to pick it up and fly to New York for the council session Saturday. The famed Boys Choir of Harlem, founded with 20 boys in the basement of a Harlem church in the 60s, performed at the White House and a lot of places. Founder of the choir, Walter Turnbull, dying today in New York City. Stocks closing higher today. The Dow Jones finishing with a gain of almost 20 points, 12,481. The NASDAQ finishing up too, 4.5 at 2,456. This is CBS News.
Lost and found. How may I help you?
Well, I seem to be lost. I was hoping you could find me.
Find you? You're joking, right?
No, really.
Well, I'm sorry. This is Lost and Found, not Search and Rescue. What you need is a Garmin Nuvi GPS.
A Nuvi?
Yeah. You'd have all the street maps. You could look up addresses, services, you name it. Then follow the voice prompts right to the door.
Continue southeast to destination.
Gosh, I wish I had a Garmin right now.
So do I. Bye now.
Garmin, the leader in navigation. We'll take you there.
It was like we were flying.
We could see homes, a school, restaurants.
We could see parks and shops.
And you know what?
We never left our living room.
At ColdwellBanker.com, advanced maps give you an aerial view of homes as well as the surrounding neighborhood. See for yourself.
I always wanted to take up flying.
Now you don't have to. Get the whole picture at ColdwellBanker.com. Coldwell Banker, your perfect partner. Each office is independently owned and operated.
Has there ever been a better time to buy your piece of the American dream? Some think not.
Existing home sales jumped nearly 4% from January to February, the biggest one-month increase in 3 years. A buyer's market, says National Association of Realtors economist David Luray.
Mortgage rates are near cyclical lows, and the economy is still growing and creating jobs.
He warns, though, failing subprime mortgages and rising foreclosures will cut into future sales. In Cleveland,
the foreclosure situation is very bad. We have the highest rate in the United States right now.
Janelle James at the East Side Organizing Project, which is launching an effort to reclaim, rehab, and resell vacated homes. Communities nationwide are spending millions cleaning up after the lending mess. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Democratic presidential hopeful Hillary Rodham Clinton picking up some support in Iowa. Officials say the former governor there, Tom Vilsack, who made a brief bid for the nomination, will endorse Clinton Monday when she's in Des Moines. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
This is Charles Osgood of the Osgood File. Emerging research suggests that eating foods naturally rich in antioxidants may help protect your memory. I think that's big news. Even more surprising is where to find those protective antioxidants. Did you know Welch's 100% grape juice has powerful antioxidants just like red wine? In fact, one independent study just ranked Welch's 100% grape juice the number one beverage for antioxidant capacity per serving among 1,000 foods tested. So if you want to help protect your memory, remember to drink delicious Welch's 100% grape juice every day. This is Charles Osgood. I'll see you on the Osgood File.
The Joneses like things fast. They use Zantac. It's fast. Like last night after dinner.
Heartburn? Painful.
Zantac.
Thank you.
And then later.
Better? Completely. Zantac's fast.
The Joneses know Zantac quickly relieves the toughest heartburn. And more. Like before the Joneses family barbecue.
Ribs?
Heartburn.
Zantac.
Hurt?
Prevents.
Amazing.
Zantac's fast.
Zantac before a meal prevents heartburn. Zantac after a meal quickly stops heartburn. Maximum strength Zantac. It's
fast.
Uses directed, controls heartburn in 30 to 60 minutes.
Peter B. Collins!
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show on this sunny Friday afternoon. It's a beautiful day around San Francisco Bay. Temperatures in the 70s. We got sunny skies. Rain's predicted to return next week, but hey, in the meantime, we're enjoying it. And we're going to talk about more than the weather. We're going to talk about climate. Climate change, global warming. With two interesting individuals in our first hour today. I'll introduce them in a moment. Coming up next hour, it's the return of John Amato. He runs the website crooksandliars.com. We're going to talk about that doctored video, the Apple 1984 commercial that was doctored to put Hillary Rodham Clinton in the Big Brother position. We'll talk about that and other viral video experiences coming up next hour. Also on today's program, Reese Ehrlich, a journalist who has a new book out about Iran called The Iran Agenda, the real story of U.S. policy in the Middle East crisis. He'll join us to talk about two things. One is the incident in the Persian Gulf that was reported first thing this morning here in California. And it involves 15 naval members of the British Navy, sailors, I guess we'd call them, who are now in detention in Iran. It's a story we'll follow. Also, he'll comment on the vote in the House today. A 6-vote margin with 2 Republicans voting with the Democrats and 14 Democrats deserting the Speaker on the Iraq supplemental bill with benchmarks, timelines, and withdrawal. And as usual, we'll talk about voting integrity with his Bradness. Brad Friedman will join us in our third and final hour today. At any moment, you can call the program and participate. It's a two-way talk show, and we grease it for you because we pay for the call. It's toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372 numerically. And you can always email me, peter at peterbcollins.com. And it's rare for a former vice president to go to Capitol Hill and testify. Al Gore testified before House and Senate committees this week. Got a lot of attention and some negative press, for sure.
But I think it has raised further awareness about the issues related to climate change, global warming. And so we've invited two people on the program this hour to discuss it. Andrew Revkin, that's Andrew C. Revkin, is the environment writer for the New York Times. And last year we met when he published a powerful book called The North Pole Was Here. And it's a science book for people of all ages, like 12 and up. Right, Andy?
Yeah, that's right.
And it really is a fascinating look at the North Pole. And through that prism, if you will, Andy takes a look at the climate change impacts in the Arctic region and kind of widens out from there. Andy Revkin, thanks for joining us today.
That's my pleasure.
And when we talked about your book in a weak moment, I asked if you'd come back on the show and joust with a skeptic on climate change, and you agreed.
I've been studying this issue for 20 years, and I talk to people, including Myron, frequently, and I think I've got a pretty good sense of the lay of the land. That way.
Well, his counterpart here is Myron E. Bell, Director of Energy and Global Warming Policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. That's a think tank in Washington, funded in part by ExxonMobil and other resource industries. Prior to joining CEI, Mr. Bell was policy director of Frontiers of Freedom. He also worked on property rights, the Endangered Species Act, federal lands policies, and global warming. And before that, he served as a senior legislative assistant to Congressman John Shattuck. And Mr. Bell, welcome to the program. It's my first time to talk with you, but I've been aware of you for a long time because there's a guy named Dave Mohel who emails me, I guess, about once a week, offering you as a guest on the program. So tell him it's working.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
Now, let me start with you, Myron Bell. Without being critical or judgmental, you have impeccable credentials as a movement conservative, but what are your credentials in terms of energy and global warming policy, which is the position you hold at the Competitive Enterprise Institute?
My credentials? Well, I've been doing this for a long time, and I read a lot of stuff, and I talk to a lot of people. Those are my credentials.
Okay. But do you have a science background, and have you studied these issues in that context?
No.
Okay. And I'm curious, in the bio at the website, you seem to be proud of some of the negative acclaim that you have earned from Greenpeace, from Rolling Stone magazine, which named you one of the six misleaders on global warming. Why is it that you revel in that kind of negative publicity?
Well, Peter, I think two reasons. One, I think people are known by their enemies, and I'm rather proud of some of my enemies. But I think secondly, of course, my bio is meant to attract interest from people like you. And so, you know, just all this kind of policy wonk stuff is not very attractive. So, you know, as long as I get these attacks, I might as well try to make something of them.
Mm-hmm. But do you enjoy that notoriety?
Not particularly, but I mean, when you get involved in political pushing and shoving, you're going to be attacked and have your opponent do things about you. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you grow either get out of it or you grow a pretty thick skin fairly quickly. So
yeah, well, you know, I have an email that I am proud of over here from Gail Norton's press secretary when she was the Secretary of Interior, mm-hmm. promising me that she would never talk to me again.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess we can bond over that, Myron.
Right,
let me start with you, Myron Abel. What was your reaction to Al Gore's testimony before the House and Senate committees on Wednesday?
Well, mostly I've heard it all before, and you know, after you've heard it a few times, it sort of loses punch. But I think there was one very interesting thing in Vice President Gore's testimony, and that is that he. In his movie, in his book, and a lot of his going around the country and giving speeches, talks a lot about the threat of global warming. But then when it turns out, and he also talks about what a big moral issue it is, and we have to gear up like we did to beat the Nazis in World War II. But then when he actually talks about what we need to do about it, it's always, well, you need to buy compact fluorescent light bulbs and a hybrid automobile and telecommute to work. But in this... In this testimony, he actually let his hair down and said, we need big taxes on carbon emission, carbon dioxide emissions. We need a cap and trade on carbon dioxide. And I think most significantly, we need to ban all new coal-fired power plants immediately unless they have carbon capture and storage technology. And I think that's very significant.
And do you approve of any of those proposals?
No, we vigorously oppose all of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Andy Revkin, for you, what was the impact of Al Gore's speech, highlights, and any criticisms you have?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think in some things, my sense of what where the reality is somewhat aligned with Myron's in terms of, you know, we did a long set of stories last fall on the energy challenge that we face. And it's correct that you can't possibly freeze emissions of carbon dioxide immediately or even over the next few years. It will take a long time to make this transition.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, what Gore is trying to do is raise consciousness, and in the fluorescent light bulbs and hybrid cars, that's a way that individuals can make a contribution, even if it's a modest one. Would you agree with that, Andy?
Actually, if you could hold on one second, I'm going to call you back on a landline.
Okay.
Maybe
well,
go to Myron for a second.
All right. So, Andy, we'll let you go. And Myron, we'll turn to you for just a moment here, and then we're going to take a break, and Andy can get on a landline. So, Myron, do you agree with me that by trying to raise consciousness and get people to take the steps that they can to reduce their own carbon footprint, as it's put, do you object to that?
Well, I actually don't think it's necessary, but if you do think it's necessary, I don't think that Mr. Gore is a leader. I really do not think he puts his own life, you know, he's got all this stuff at the end of his book and his movie about how you need to make a personal commitment to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in fact, you know, he flies all around the world in a private jet, provided by Lori David or somebody in Hollywood. He's on a jet 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times a week. Now, commercial air travel is like mass transit. It moves people fairly efficiently in terms of the amount of energy per person it uses. But when you're in a private jet, you are using a huge amount of energy to get from, you know, San Francisco to Washington, D.C. And so I really don't, and you know, it's come out that his house uses $30,000 worth of electricity a year, which in California may not be too much. I don't know. I know you have the highest electricity prices in the country.
Yeah.
So, but in Tennessee, they don't. And so, you know, I really don't think he's a leader.
But how does, you know, that to me is a kind of sniping based on dumpster diving and, you know, reviewing his utility records and basically, you know, trying to expose him as a hypocrite. And I'm less interested in Al Gore's, you know, personal practices than the message that he has put forth in his testimony this week and in the book and the film. And, you know, we can come up with all kinds of hypocrisies on all sides of the political spectrum. But to me, the important thing is that he has, you know, taken a lot of time and effort to try to educate people about these issues. And if you want to try to divert people into his personal life or, you know, maybe the next step is we're going to talk about his weight or the change in his hairstyle, you know, frankly, you're welcome to make those comments. But I think that they're just a distraction and they undermine your credibility in trying to raise skepticism about the central points of climate change.
Well, you know, I think that it is a cheap point to say that somebody's a hypocrite, but I do think that leadership involves matching words and deeds, matching your words to your deeds and your deeds to your words. And look, if you were a Civil War general, you know, if you couldn't be in the Civil War, you could buy your way for $300. But if you did that, if you didn't in the Union Army, now if you did that and you paid the $300 to find a replacement, could you say that you were a war leader? You were a commanding officer? Well, Al Gore is the commanding officer who is basically paying his way out of doing anything. And I think this reveals a very strong distinction between what the elite in this country thinks is good for regular people and what they think that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you find a lot of these people who support, oh, yeah, I have a hybrid car. You know, a lot of the people who are doing this are using huge amounts of energy in not only their own personal lives, but in their air travel, their they're just all of the things that we have now.
Okay, I've got your point, and I've got to take a break. We'll continue in just a moment and correct some of our technical issues here. Myron Abell was just speaking. He's from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and we'll reconnect with the New York Times reporter Andy Revkin in just a moment on the other side of this break. If you have a question or comment, join us this hour at 888-5-PETER-B. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant at Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's a Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Post Graduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, there's a little something that's been freaking me.
read it in the news, I seen it on TV. It haunts me in the night and creeps me in the morning. A spooky little thing called global warming. It seems our indispensable amenities, like hairspray, air conditioners, and SUVs, are causing big emissions, all of which are forming a spooky little thing called global warming.
We're talking about the debate over climate change, and Myron Abell is with us from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, where he's Director of Energy and Global Warming Policy. And also with us, Andrew C. Revkin. Andy Revkin, New York Times environmental reporter, and the author of a great book called The North Pole Was Here. And I just used the term debate, caught myself there. Gentlemen, is there a debate remaining over these issues? Myron Abell, do you think there's a serious debate about whether the Earth is warming and whether human activity is a major contributor to it?
No, I don't really. I think, though, that I think there is a debate about the significance of the rate of warming and what the future holds and about what the impacts may be. I think that that's, I personally think that the rate of warming is extremely modest, and I think that the IPCC reports that are put together by all these climate scientists every few years under the United Nations show that the impacts are mixed and fairly mild.
Okay, Andy, do you agree with that?
Generally, yeah. What he just said, I think, is true.
Mixed
I think a
and
lot
mild.
Of people in this country still, though, haven't gotten even that far on their learning curve. So there's a lot of polling and a lot of that indicates a lot of confusion still, even on the basic question of whether humans are influencing climate.
Mm-hmm.
And on that front, it is, as Myron says, not disputed. In fact, I was at this debate in New York City a week or so ago, and Michael Crichton and Richard Lindzen, an MIT climatologist who's long complained about alarmism, were debating with some scientists who have a more urgent sense of the problem, and no one on the stage disagreed on the basics. Basically, greenhouse gases coming from burning stuff will make the planet warmer than it would otherwise be, and,
mm-hmm.
and I think at the very least, it would be great if the public kind of moved past that question to, as Myron said, the very legitimate questions about how do you respond.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah, but hold on. Hey, we have to mention, Andy, that who won that debate, by the way.
Oh, I was there. It was, the majority of people coming in held up little cards saying that they believed global warming was a crisis. The debate was, is global warming a crisis? What was
mm-hmm.
interesting, by the way, about the debate was the question wasn't, is global warming real? The debate has moved way beyond that. It's moved to, is it a crisis? And that all depends on your values and
mm-hmm.
how do you value uncertainty, how you value the future. And that's why I think a lot of people in the audience realized that on that front, sure,
mm-hmm.
there's a big range of views.
But Myron Abell, even if we don't have a crisis, isn't it good for humankind to reduce the amount of pollutants, particularly CO2, that we pump into the atmosphere from human activities?
Let me go back to this debate first, because I think it was a good viewing of where we are. Now, remember, this is New York City, which is just about as liberal and rich and wealthy.
It was the Upper East Side.
Yeah, and it is a very educated audience, and I think it was 57% to 30% or something like that going in believed that global warming was a crisis. And after the debate, it was 42% thought that global warming was a crisis, and 46% thought that it wasn't. So that's a huge swing once people are presented with the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the facts, and that's where I am. I don't think global warming is a crisis. And I think the problem is, if global warming turns out to be a problem, is the way we're dealing with it now, or the way that the Kyoto Treaty and the European Union are dealing with it now, is that the right way to go? And I think it's an absolute dead end. I think that the costs are, 50 or 100 times more than the benefits you get from it. And so I think what the world is doing right now, even if you believe global warming is a problem, I think that the world is wasting its time and its money on what is really a dead end.
Hmm. And to my question, and we have about 30 seconds, even if it's not a crisis, isn't it good for humans to reduce the amount of CO2 that we're putting out, reduce our reliance on foreign oil and those sorts of things?
All things considered, I think not. I think the problem is that the world is not energy rich, it's energy poor. The world gets 85% of its energy from coal, oil, and natural gas. Department of Energy estimates that in the next 25 years, the world is going to use 70% more. Most of that increase is not in the United States.
Okay, I have to stop for a break. We'll pick up there as we continue. Myron, we're going to call you back. We got a bad connection. And we'll continue with Myron Ebell and Andy Revkin on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
It's tax time again. And there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay Area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund as soon as you need it. In 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, the choice is yours. The personnel at Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax return tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today, located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just 2 blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to take a copy of your 2005 federal and California returns and W-2 1099 info for 2006. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today at 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has 3 locations to serve you better wherever you live. All 3 locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
"We're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service."
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
It's time to start talking about the 2008 presidential elections. Here, Monday nights between 10 and 11 p.m. with your host, me, Todd Hurlbert, Alan Vasquez, and our show, The Week in Politics. We will talk about and talk with the Democratic and Republican candidates for the presidential election. Please join us in our effort to educate our audience about the issues. See you there.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
33 minutes after the hour as we continue our discussion about climate change, global warming issues with Andrew Revkin. He writes the New York Times environmental columns, and he published a book last year called The North Pole Was Here. And it's a great book. I recommend it to you if you haven't seen it yet. Also with us is Myron Ebell. He is a fellow at and director of energy and global warming policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we're talking about Al Gore's comments before the Senate and House earlier this week and the issues in general. Gentlemen, next I'd like to turn to the concept of cap and trade systems. This is an attempt to apply market forces, capitalism, to the desire to reduce our CO2 and other greenhouse gas emissions. And it strikes me that if it can be made to work, that this could be a kind of stock exchange that incentivizes nations and industries to reduce their outputs of pollution and of these gases that we're describing. Andy Revkin, do you see this as a feasible prospect, and how soon will an effective cap-and-trade system be in place?
Oh, boy. Well, it's such a bear. You know, between theory and practice lies a huge canyon in most things. And as Myron will be quick to point out, Kyoto, the idea of a global cap and trading system is very appealing on paper because it's a way for those who have emissions that they can't cheaply reduce to scour the world for the lowest hanging fruit, the quickest emissions cuts you can get by any other means in a poor country or whatever. But as it's playing out, you know, it's very limited. A lot of countries aren't playing, including the United States and the big developing countries won't take on their own emissions caps. And even within those who have agreed, the trading that's going on, it's hard to know whether all of it's actually making much difference. Here we had a great success story with cap and trade on a much simpler pollutant to deal with in 1990. It was the Clean Air Act and sulfur from smokestacks. But you kind of know the sources, you know the tons, and it's easy to kind of verify. So it's a challenge, and it's always been seen as, I mean, economists would tell you right away that the most efficient way to get someone to use less of something is to have a price on it, a mm-hmm. tax. And, mm-hmm. But taxes, of course, have political barriers. So how do you move from A to B? It's very unclear still to me as an observer of all this.
Okay. Myron, what are your issues, and do you support the general concept of a cap-and-trade system?
No, we oppose it. You know, I think Andy got it just right. There are tremendous practical barriers to having a cap and trade work compared to, say, just a tax on coal, oil, and natural gas use. And one of them is the corruption problem. The leading advocate in this country of cap and trade until something unfortunate happened to them was Enron. And the reason is because there's a million and one ways to make money by gaming the system. And this is already happening in Europe. The price is being manipulated. It's of credits, of emissions quotas. It's going up and down. And somebody's making a lot of money, but emissions aren't actually going down very much. And so, you know, look, I don't favor taxes, and if we have to fight a carbon tax, we'll oppose that too. But I think if you really are serious about addressing emissions and cutting emissions, you have to go with a tax rather than this. Because a cap and trade is a kind of inefficient but hidden tax. And the reason a lot of economists get really excited about cap and trade is because it's really fun and you're concealing what you're doing from the public because they don't know why the costs are going up.
Andy, do you have anything to add there?
Well, on the flip side, in terms of the energy challenges we face, one thing that I have been told over and over again by a lot of economists, including Glenn Hubbard, who once advised the White House, I mean, they all agree that somehow or other you can't get from A to B. You can't get the world moving toward a transformation away from filling the atmosphere with more of these greenhouse gases from burning fossil fuels without a disincentive mm-hmm. to putting just, you know, the free dump aspect of the atmosphere that's been there ever. You know, no one has charged anyone a fee for fossil fuel emissions going into the atmosphere yet. And that is kind of it has to happen in some way or other to drive innovation, too. Even if I wrote the story for our series, it's all archived at nytimes.com/energychallenge that laid out that also the other thing we're not doing is we're not putting any money, real money, into research and development, basic research on new energy options that don't come with these emissions. But even if you did that, most economists feel you also need the stick. You need the carrot of, you know, but you need a stick too, to the disincentive for the old practice to get things shifting in the new direction.
Mm-hmm. And so, bottom line here, Myron, are we at kind of a deadlock from your point of view that, number one, you don't believe there's a crisis. Number two, you think that the Kyoto approach and the idea of cap-and-trade systems aren't workable. What is your approach? What do you believe is a responsible stewardship of the planet in terms of these issues that, you know, 95% of the scientists have reached consensus on that we have a problem? You might try to quibble over whether it's a crisis or not, but it certainly is a growing problem, and the indicators are pretty clear.
Well, I think it's a minor problem, and I think actually an awful lot of scientists think it's a minor problem. But look, if global warming turns out to be a major problem, and I think the first thing we need to recognize is that most modern industrial societies are not very vulnerable to changes in weather or to big weather or to bad weather. We have successful societies in Toronto and Houston. So I don't think that it is going to be a big problem for us. The places where weather and changes in weather are a problem are subsistence societies, the poorest societies in the world, where people have to worry about getting this year's harvest in order to have enough to eat for till next year's harvest. And what is it? Why is that? It's because they lack modern technology and modern energy. So I think the reality is that we're going to be using a lot more energy in the world in the next 50 years. Most of it is going to come from coal, oil, and natural gas. And I believe in technological progress. I think we're using energy more efficiently, and I think that new energy sources over time will take over from coal, oil, and natural gas. But I don't think it's a 50-year process or a 30-year process the way Al Gore and some of these others say that we've got the crisis is so immediate that we've got 10 years to turn the world around. It's not going to happen, and we have to see that if global warming turns out to be a problem, it's got to be a 100-year and 150-year solution. And I think that's going to happen whether, you know, we've got Al Gore flying around the country or not.
Well, to counter your minimization there, Myron, Ross Gelbspan, a journalist who I give high credibility to, has written a couple of books about this. And in particular, he says the insurance industry is extremely concerned about this. And the extreme weather events that have occurred over the last 10 years have cost them considerable amounts of money. And so he believes that the economic pressure in the developed world is going to start coming from insurance companies and the industries that they have insured that have been heavily impacted by extreme weather and presumably down the road by other factors like rising sea levels, et cetera.
Yes, I think the insurance industry, like all industries, has a profit motive, and they try to spin things in their direction. What they have is, they want to be able to charge higher premiums and have lower payouts, and then they'll make a lot more money. And the fact is that they've insured an awful lot of places where all the growth has been in this country in the last few decades. It's all been in Hurricane Alley in the south, along the Gulf and along the southeast Atlantic coast. And if you look at their exposure, they want to be able to raise premiums and somehow minimize payouts for when big storms hit. And so they want to use global warming as a reason to raise their premiums. And I think they're doing a pretty good job selling that idea. But I think if you look at the actual figures, you will see that as a percentage of our economy, disasters are not costing us any more, even though we've had huge population growth in Florida, in Texas, in South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, right along the coast. People used to have beach shacks, and they now have multi-million-dollar houses right on the coast. And if a hurricane ever hits, whether it's caused by global warming or not, who cares? It's going to do major damage. And so I really think that, the problem is not one of storms, it's one of where we allow major development to occur, where people are willing to live. I mean, a lot of people value living right on the beach, and they're willing to put up with a big storm every once in a while that wrecks their house.
And okay, I have your point.
Paid for it.
Andy, do you agree?
Well, the other one of the issues that hasn't really gotten attention from any of the advocates at either pole of this problem that I've been focused a lot on the last couple of weeks reporting a story is that the vulnerabilities, the true vulnerabilities, all lie in developing countries that have not actually added any of the greenhouse gases in any significant quantity to the atmosphere in the last 100 years that scientists now feel with 90% confidence is the main driver of recent warming. So you have this weird paradox where in actual cost, he's right, you know, the big countries, the big rich countries of the world, we're already adapting just nicely to climate. We have genetically modified strains of crops that do great in drier conditions. We're building desalination plants around the world where we need them, countries that have the money. So it's not an issue in terms of our vulnerability. And at the same time, it is an issue if you're, sort of a small landholder or itinerant rural farmer in Africa, southern Africa particularly, that you will never know it, but the conditions are more likely to be on the harsh end of things as a result of this warming trend, according to most of the models, and you had nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting paradox, and there's very little money or focus yet flowing to help those countries adapt to changes, and these are the changes that are inevitable. No matter if we had a perfect policy tomorrow, if someone, whether it's Gore or anybody else, went around and turned off every light in the world and every engine, the climate is going to keep warming for at least 20 years at a rate that wouldn't. If we had a worst possible policy where we all jumped in Hummers and drove in circles, or a best possible policy, you wouldn't know the difference. The climate system will not notice the difference for at least 20 years. So, and in the meantime, there's a lot of pressures that are going to be put on people in some of the poorest places of the world who never never turned on a microwave.
Yeah. Larry and Aptos, join us here on the Peter B. Collins Show with Andy Revkin and Myron Ebell.
Well, your friend of the gas and oil industry guest, he just said that the insurance companies are just interested in their profits. What about the oil and gas industry? They're not concerned about their profits if there's more solar, if there's more wind energy companies, if there's electric car companies. I mean, give me a break. They're concerned about their profits, too, and they look at alternative energy as a threat to their existence in the future. And they either want to buy up all the patents of these small companies that might want to make solar energy panels or better batteries. I just heard that Mobil Exxon owns a patent of some battery that could get electric cars 500-mile distance between charge-ups. I mean, give me a break.
All right. Myron, what's your reaction?
Well, you know, I think it's in industry, looking at business, I think it's fair to look at everybody's motives, and the motive is always the same. They want to make money. That's what they're in business for. If they didn't make money, they'd go out of business and stop providing the product.
The problem, though, with your argument is that these companies don't want any competition, and they want to kill clean energy competition. Look at Jimmy Carter. He said back when he was president, he wanted the United States to be 20% run on solar energy by the year 2000. Reagan gets in, and the first thing he does is he pulls the solar energy panels off the White House roof. That was very symbolic.
Well, you make a good point. In fact, President Reagan, with one stroke of the pen, solved the energy crisis that was engineered by President Nixon and Carter and the Congress, which was he fully deregulated energy prices. And within a year or so, the price of oil was no longer a big concern. All of these companies are invested in all kinds of things. BP and Shell want you to believe that they are the energy companies of the future that are going to be providing solar power, wind power, all of the new technologies.
Kicking and whatever in order to get there.
Well, Larry, in fact, BP has a big solar enterprise in Southern California. I think that it's part hedging their bets and part greenwashing. That's my take. Andy Revkin?
Exactly right.
Mm. Andy?
Yeah, well, kind of everyone's right that I've heard so far. On this point, we essentially have had no assertive, aggressive, sustained effort to come up with energy alternatives in this country since the 70s. The other thing that Reagan did with a stroke of a pen was he gutted the solar energy research program that the United States had going in a big way in the 70s through until 81, 82. And that effort has never been revived under Republican or Democratic leadership. Our energy research money has just dribbled away. At nytimes.com/energy challenge, we show a graph that shows what the research money we've pumped into health, into defense, into every other sector except energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I could say one more thing, it's because prices have been low.
Hold on, Larry.
Sorry. And, you know, it's really not an issue for people as long as you can plug something into, you know, plug something into the wall and turn it on. You're going to do it. We love energy. Modern society, democracy thrives on overabundant energy. And unless society gets really engaged on the idea that not just for climate reasons, but, you know, to limit our insecurity in terms of oil, to help the third world become developed without roasting the planet or having, you know, their own environmental problems related mm-hmm. to coal and all that stuff. Unless we have this become a front burner issue in a sustained way, not around blips of, you know, a movie coming out or whatever, then mm-hmm. we're not going to see significant progress.
Larry, I'm late for a break. Hold on. We'll come back to you right after the break. Larry in Aptos, Andy Revkin in New York, and Myron Abell in Washington. I'm Peter B. Collins, and for the record, I'm in San Francisco. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just 2 blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Karma Shell at Rio Road and Mid Karma Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Billy Sunshine Show. Billy Sunshine Show. With P-Lar. With P-Lar.
Sunday at 3 o'clock, we're going to be doing something new, something different, or we'll do the same old thing, take your phone calls. One thing we know for sure, I'll have something to say. What? I don't know. I never know until I've said it. Find out what's the next thing to come out of my mouth.
The Billy Sunshine Show with P-Lar.
Sundays from 3 to 5. 3 to 5.
On AM 540. KRXA.
B. Collins Show, this news just in. Former Deputy Interior Secretary J. Stephen Griles pleaded guilty today to obstruction of justice in a Senate committee's investigation, becoming the highest-ranking Bush administration official convicted in the Jack Abramoff corruption scandal. And the Interior Department under Bush has been loaded with people from the industry it's supposed to regulate. We continue our conversation with Andrew Revkin, New York Times environment reporter, and Myron Ibell from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. That was the Marlboro theme. And, Myron, I played that because your work and your position kind of reminds me of that movie, Thank You for Smoking. Have you seen it?
I haven't, but, you know, I'm a native of a cattle ranching country in Oregon, so I identify with the Marlboro advertising campaign. It's not with Marlboro, so I've never smoked, and I don't have any interest in it.
Well, I'd like you to spend $3 and rent the DVD of Thank You for Smoking.
I've been meaning to. I just haven't gotten around to it.
See if you see yourself there.
I haven't yet seen the great global warming swindle that was on English television a couple weeks ago, and, you know, everybody else has seen it on Google or YouTube or somewhere, and I haven't had a chance.
Well, I'm with you on that. I haven't seen it yet either. Larry from Aptos is still holding. Larry, you're back on the air. Go ahead with your other point. Larry, do we have you? Going once, going twice. All right, Michael in Arcata, you're next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, kind of ironic. That's really not the Marlboro theme. It's the theme for the Magnificent Seven, wherein good people protected those who were defenseless. It just sort of came up because there's all this cost-benefit analysis, and there's nothing that I would consider to be the real moral argument here, which is if we wait until things are a crisis for the profits and for the industrialized world, you know, if it's all about is it a crisis now, then you're not considering what the real losses are to the other species on this planet that we share, you know, with the damage to the natural world. That's what, if we wait until global warming is a crisis, we will already have lost, because we as a species will have been diminished by our short-sightedness, and I think it's a broader moral question here. You know, profits be damned. You know, this cost benefit analysis thing makes me sick. So consider it a little bit more broadly, please.
All right. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate that point. And, gentlemen, one of the comments made by Al Gore the other day was metaphorical. He said, the planet's got a fever. And then he started to talk about if your baby's got a fever, what you do. And he had a little joke in there, but if the crib's on fire, you don't imagine that the baby's flame retardant because you read about it in a science fiction novel. Myron, did that resonate with you, as W might say?
Well, you know, if your baby's got a fever, you don't go to a quack. The problem is, I mean, Al Gore is framing this as a kind of religious issue. It's a moral crusade for him. But I would just put it this way, in terms of the cost-benefit, that your complaint from your caller about doing cost-benefit analysis. Everybody in Congress says now, well, we got to get started. We got to take the first step. But look, if you're going from San Francisco to Arcata, and the first road sign you see south of San Francisco says, you know, Santa Cruz, 110 miles, you're going in the wrong direction, and that is what we're doing now. The fact is, I agree with Al Gore, this issue has very serious moral implications. There are between 1.5 billion and 2 billion people in this world who do not have access to electricity. They do not enjoy, they cannot possibly enjoy any of the benefits of modern industrial civilization. So what is a poor country doing? China, it was estimated today, I've seen in the news story, will surpass U.S. emissions of carbon dioxide, not in 2020, as a year ago they said, not in 2009, as last fall they estimated. They will do so this year. The reason is because they are trying to electrify the country as quickly as they can. The cheapest source is a coal-fired power plant. They have huge reserves of coal, and they are improving the lives of people in China by building huge numbers of coal-fired power plants, and they're going to continue to do that no matter what we decide to do.
All right, Myron, I got to hold you there because only a minute remaining. I want to get a comment from Andy about the planet having a fever.
Well, it as that caller just said, I mean, this really does come down to an issue of weighing values and risks. And as Myron's pointing to the economic risks and the impeding of development in other countries, the reality is that that's the case. Countries that lack energy need it, and they will get it by any means necessary, and their issues are much more important to them than climate. So we have to recognize that in the developed world. And many experts I talk to say that's another reason to press very hard on research and development, and as well as those who say you do need a tax or some kind of limit on emissions as well. It's going to fall mainly on the industrialized nations to step first. And one reason I wrote that the North Pole was here for younger people too, is this is going to take time. Is, you know, Myron's correct on that. This is not an overnight situation.
Mm-hmm.
In the political arena, sometimes people push harder and pull harder, as Myron and people like Al Gore do, than they probably think is realistic. But for my kids and grandkids and the rest of the world's next generation, that's both the impacts of warming and the impacts of our policy choices are mainly going to fall on them.
I want to thank you both for joining us today. Andrew Revkin spoke last there. Myron Abell was just before him from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
We'll continue after a top-of-the-hour news break.
Hello, everybody. This is R.J. Moyer. Join me Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. for Sports Phone KRXA. Now all of us Monday morning quarterbacks can get together Sunday nights and talk about football, baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, hockey, softball, volleyball, kickball, bocce ball, bowling, rugby, lacrosse. Well, maybe we won't talk about rugby and lacrosse, but join me anyway for Sports Phone KRXA, Sunday nights from 6 p.m. until 7 p.m.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, well, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Officers are now implicated in the death of a former NFL star turned soldier.
Until now, only low-ranking soldiers who were part of Tillman's Army Ranger unit have been disciplined.
And the House sets a withdrawal date from Iraq.
On this vote, the yeas are 218, the nays are 212.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Cammie McCormick. Pat Tillman's death in Afghanistan could now lead to disciplinary action against some top officers. CBS News correspondent David Martin has this exclusive report from the Pentagon.
It's been nearly 4 years since Pat Tillman was killed by friendly fire. And CBS News has learned an investigation by the Pentagon's Inspector General will blame 9 officers, including 4 generals, for failing to follow regulations and using poor judgment in a series of missteps that kept the truth of how he died from his family for more than a month. The official version was that the former NFL star had died in a firefight with the enemy, and it was only after a nationally televised memorial service was held for Tillman that his wife and parents were told he had been mistakenly shot by one of his own men.
It will be up to the Army to decide what, if any, disciplinary action to take. In a highly unusual move, an entire unit of Marines is being brought home from Afghanistan, some of its members charged with shooting and killing civilians after a suicide bombing targeted their convoy. An emotional debate over an issue that's divided Americans and Congress. In the House today, Democrats pulled together enough votes to demand a withdrawal from Iraq. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss begins our coverage.
It was a close vote, but Democratic leaders delivered their message, and it was powerful. Money to pay for the war comes with a deadline to pull troops out of Iraq within 18 months. Pennsylvania Democrat John Murtha helped lead the charge and got emotional at the end.
We're going to make a difference with this bill. We're going to bring those troops home. We're going to start changing the direction of this great country.
Another veteran who cares deeply about the troops was on the other side, Republican Sam Johnson of Texas.
Literally, this bill forces our guys on the ground to fight a war with one arm tied behind their backs. That just smacks of defeat.
In the Senate, Democrats face tougher hurdles but are pursuing a similar strategy, insisting money for the war is going to go to the president only with strings attached. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
I'm Mark Knoller at the White House, where President Bush decried the House-passed bill as an act of political theater that has no chance of becoming law.
As I've made clear for weeks, I will veto it if it comes to my desk. And because the vote in the House was so close, it is clear that my veto would be sustained.
Aside from the timeline for withdrawal from Iraq, Mr. Bush also decried the billions of dollars in unrelated spending inserted in the bill. He said House Democrats abdicated their responsibility and now need to send him a funding bill he can sign.
In Baghdad today, a Sunni deputy prime minister was seriously injured in an attack on a mosque within his compound. CBS News correspondent Alan Pizzi is in Baghdad.
There are some reports that the suicide bomber may actually have been one of his own guards, and that's how he managed to get that far into the fortified compound with the suicide vest.
9 people died. Now this.
Thanks for helping me move, Liz.
Sure.
Time for that California Chardonnay we love.
Ooh, Corbett Canyon?
Canyon.
We're never going to find a corkscrew.
Oh, don't need one. Got the Corbett Canyon Premium Wine Cask.
Clever.
Keeps air out, flavor in. Just turn the tap for a glass of crisp, refreshing Chardonnay.
Mm.
And get this. After it's opened, keeps wine fresh for 6 weeks.
Bet a woman invented it.
Why's that?
Clever, practical, don't need a tool to open it.
Good taste is worth repeating. The Premium Wine Cask from Corbett Canyon. Corbett Canyon Vineyard, San Luis Obispo, California.
And now for the bonus round. If second place is the first loser, who came in last?
Billy.
Correct. Nothing rhymes with orange. What color are my boxers?
Duh, they're blue.
Correct. What's the affordable way to rent DVDs?
Netflix, with plans from only $4.99 a month.
Correct! Netflix! Choose your movies online and get DVDs delivered to your door in about one business day. Plans now from only $4.99 a month and never a late fee. Start your free trial today. Netflix, it's that easy.
Tensions between the West and Iran were ratcheted up today after Iran seized several British sailors in Iraq's territorial waters. Commodore Nick Lambert.
I've got 15 sailors and Marines who've been arrested by the Iranians, and my immediate concern is that they are their safety and their safe return to me.
Iranian President Ahmadinejad has canceled a trip to New York to address the UN. The Iranians say there were visa issues. Health experts confirmed today a substance used as rat poison was found in some samples of cat food from Menu Foods. That company recalled 60 million cans of pet food. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Lost and found. How may I help you?
Well, I seem to be lost. I was hoping you could find me.
Find you? You're joking, right?
No, really.
Well, I'm sorry. This is Lost and Found, not Search and Rescue. What you need is a Garmin Nuvi GPS.
A Nuvi?
Yeah. You'd have all the street maps. You could look up addresses, services, you name it. Then follow the voice prompts right to the door.
Continue southeast to destination.
Gosh, I wish I had a Garmin right now.
So do I. Bye now.
Garmin, the leader in navigation. We'll take you there.
It was like we were flying.
We could see homes, a school, restaurants.
We could see parks and shops.
And you know what?
We never left our living room.
At ColdwellBanker.com, advanced maps give you an aerial view of homes as well as the surrounding neighborhood. See for yourself.
I always wanted to take up flying.
Now you don't have to. Get the whole picture at ColdwellBanker.com. Coldwell Banker, your perfect partner. Each office is independently owned and operated.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We got this party started. I am your humble host, Peter B. Collins. Coming up later this hour, Reese Ehrlich is going to join us. He's got a book coming out shortly called The Iran Agenda, The Real Story of U.S. Policy in the Middle East Crisis. And it's very timely. There was an incident today in the Persian Gulf. Maybe you've heard about it. 15 British sailors are now in custody of Iran. Is this the kind of trigger event that could lead the U.S. to launch a military assault on Iran? Well, we'll ask Reese to comment on that. And also, on the House vote, Nancy Pelosi was successful today and got the package passed. This is the Iraq supplemental, $124 billion. And as you know, I have very mixed feelings about this. It's better than nothing, but chances are it will amount to nothing, because the president fully intends to veto it. He gave a news statement later in the day today after the House vote. Now, on the other hand, it's a step forward. The Democrats were able to cobble together enough votes to win by 6. 14 Democrats voted no. 2 Republicans voted yes. Pete Stark, who we mentioned yesterday, he's the Democrat from the East Bay of San Francisco, who was reported to be on the fence. We called his office, invited him to come on the show. We didn't hear from him. But he voted present in the House today, the only member to do so. And so it moves forward. The Senate will likely strip off some of the Christmas tree items, the sweeteners, $24 billion or so worth of bribes to get this passed. And ultimately, I think the Democrats will face the reality that they have no choice but to move aggressively to cut off funds for Bush's misguided war. And they've got to screw up their courage and thicken their skin and be prepared for all the name-calling from the right. Cut and run, slow bleed, don't support the troops, all that crap. It's out there. They're going to say that. We know that. And they're wrong. And they know it. But politically, they can't move in that direction. The Republicans are more or less unified. Walter Jones of, I believe, North Carolina. I get my Carolinas mixed up sometimes. A principled and a very devout Christian who voted for the war and then changed his mind. He was one of two Republicans to vote for the timelines, for the withdrawal. And, you know, I was disappointed that Speaker Pelosi used arm-twisting tactics to get some of the votes she got. And ultimately, I think it will kind of harden the divisions in the Democratic ranks and not produce the desired effect. I hope I'm wrong about that. But if you saw or heard the president's remarks, you know, he's pretty well dug in. And he is going to keep presenting the Democrats as partisan, even when they're not. Because that's all he's got. And that's all he knows how to do. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. In just a few minutes, John Amato is going to join us. He's the proprietor of the website crooksandliars.com. He begged for a couple of more minutes because I guess he's working on a late-breaking video. And I want to talk with him about the doctored video that was up on YouTube. It was a remade version of the Apple 1984 Big Brother commercial. And it was a hit on Hillary Rodham Clinton. And I find this very interesting because it reflects the, you know, the independent view. Now, this guy who has surfaced who accepts responsibility, Phil DeVellis, for the video, was working indirectly for the Obama campaign for a company called Blue State Digital. But he said, look, I did it at home on my Mac on a Sunday afternoon. And I'll ask John Amato to comment on this in a few minutes when he joins us. But this is a blog post that I picked up at the Mother Jones blog today. And I'm sorry that I copied it, but I didn't capture the name of the individual. It is a woman who wrote this. Have you seen Hillary 1984? You've got to. It's brilliant. 500,000 people have already seen it. It's the advent of a new political era. The minute-and-a-half-long clip shows hundreds of men as just ashen drones marching in line and then sitting down before a screen under Hillary's head, talking, detached from her body. Everything is gray and lifeless. The only dash of color at all is when a busty blonde wearing only a white tank and orange shorts, a Hooters girl's outfit, but with only one O in the logo over her chest, runs through the crowd of men and hurls a javelin at Hillary's head. Well, it's actually a hammer. At least that's the way it looked to me. Shattering the screen, spreading light everywhere. Yep, it's brilliant. And lefty bloggers are cheering it as the advent of open source politics because it's on YouTube. What none of them has mentioned is the reason why it's so effective. It exploits subconscious bigotry, just like the ad for now U.S. Senator Bob Corker last October. That was the hit on Harold Ford. You know, I met Harold at the Playboy party. Wink, Harold, call me. The racism operated subtly and subconsciously enough to change the minds of people who would never admit to being racist. Lefties pointed that out, but not as loudly as they should have, and Ford lost. Likewise, women weren't recognized as fully human in this country until recently, and modern society still has a taboo against women holding power. Lefty bloggers who don't think Hillary has the charisma to win the general election may be happy that this ad will derail her in the primary. But they look like hypocrites unless they stop cheering for a moment to mention that the ad operates on bigotry. That goes for you too, Arianna Huffington, author of the You Go Girl self-help book on becoming fearless. Unless, I guess, you'd rather play the javelin thrower in the Hooters uniform. Well, to this anonymous poster, I don't agree. I don't see it as sexist or bigoted. And I think that Hillary is now a public figure. And that this sent her up as a big brother-like figure of the establishment. I think she's fair game. And while you can argue over the origin of this message and, you know, whether it was approved by the Obama campaign, I think that it will have an impact, no doubt about it. Well, I went to Crooks and Liars and pulled up a clip here. I watched this on Jon Stewart's Daily Show the other night, and I'm going to play part of it here. This is a clip that reprises his interview with John Bolton the night before, and it's hilarious.
We're all on Twitter over the visit yesterday from Ambassador John Bolton. what a lovely time we had, a very pleasant interview. It was an interview that had, I thought, one particular running theme.
It would take a little bit longer than we have to explain what you just said that was wrong. I think that's exactly wrong. It is not the case. I think you're making a mistake there. I would suggest you've got a problem with Democratic theory.
Let's go with Lincoln. He chose people from varying points of view, people that truly disagreed with him and empowered them.
I think you're historically wrong on Lincoln.
It turns out that the theme of that interview was, I am frequently, ignorantly, woefully wrong. No, that's nothing I wasn't already aware of. Told throughout childhood, in fact. And teenhood. Settle down. That's not my real life we're talking about.
So he went on to pick up the phone and talk to historian Doris Kearns Goodwin to try to get straight about Lincoln, and basically came up with the corroboration he was looking for, that yes, he was right, and John Bolton was wrong. Anyway, that was a very interesting episode. We're going to take a quick break and return, and John Amato will join us from crooksandliars.com. If you'd like to talk with him, go ahead and grab a line now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. This week on Rockrilla Real Estate, your number one source for all your real estate needs, Jim Ross, president of National Real Estate Holdings. Jim will share his thoughts and vision of what he sees as hot real estate markets to invest in. He'll be discussing a very hot deal in Orlando, Florida. That's this week on the number one Sunday morning real estate show in America, Rockrilla Real Estate. Call for market updates and how to become a guest at 408-892-3376 or visit our website, rockrollerrealestate.com. Rockrilla Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
And a very pleasant good afternoon to you. Let's take a look at the latest on this Friday. Okay, we're going to talk about the Santa Cruz Mountains. Skyline Boulevard at Bear Creek getting reports of a solo vehicle partially blocking. Now, it's partially blocking the eastbound lane. Also going to mention Santa Cruz southbound 17 before Highway 1. There is a solo vehicle crash to report there. And it's in the center divide. It looks like CHP now on scene, which is certainly some good news. Let's do take a look at another situation working. Let's take a look at Highway 17 itself. No major stalls or accidents to report there, which is outstanding news to report. And we're also going to mention that Santa Cruz, we do have Highway 1 southbound, the on-ramp to Morrissey, the on- and off-ramp shut down 24 hours a day for road work until May 1st. This report brought to you by Office Depot. Don't risk running out of ink, slowing down your business. Hurry into Office Depot today.
Show.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox and Four Parts without commercial interruptions.
Somebody's got to notify Gil Scott-Heron it's time to update that. Because with sites like YouTube and crooksandliars.com, the revolution's being televised, and the footage is being provided by average individual citizens in so many cases. John Amato joins us and returns to the program today. He is the proprietor of crooksandliars.com. Hello, John.
Hey, buddy, I love Gil Scott-Heron. I'm glad you got that music playing.
Yeah, it's really cool, isn't it?
It is. It sounds like yesterday, and you just forget how old it is.
Well, when he starts to refer to Nixon and Agnew and Mitchell.
I know. Okay.
And some of the other references are about the Hallmark Hour on PBS and some of the commercials that were popular at the time. But I wanted to ask you to comment on the development this week, the 1984 Apple TV commercial, the Big Brother one, that was revamped and updated by a webhead named Phil DeVellis. And it turns out he works for Blue State Digital. They have been doing work for the Obama campaign. But he did this on his own, on his Mac, on a Sunday afternoon, and then just uploaded it to YouTube. This is quite a story.
No, it really is. And again, it shows the power of video and imagery. And in our culture, I mean, I always talk about pop culture, we're so melded and married to the images. We all watch TV 24/7. I mean, not all of us, but a lot of us. And when I decided to do video on Crooks and Liars, I knew that video is powerful. And when you see, hear people speak instead of just reading some quotes, it's much more effective, and that's what I brought to my site. And so now you see this gentleman, Philip, on his own, just go, you know what, I got an idea, I'm not a Hillary fan, and I'm going to make this ad. And it really, it's really taken off, and again, shows the power of video.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever seen Phil DeVellis' work before? Had he ever sent anything your way?
Not video. He's worked on the Sherrod Brown campaign before. As far as I know, and I take him at his word, and also Obama's word, that they had no idea he was going to do this, and so he just got an idea. And I think that's what happens. You know, ideas are formed, but a lot of people do not take action. And so, you know, how many people have you talked about said, you know what, I had that idea 5 years ago, but I didn't do anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it happens to a lot of people. Well, you know what, he got an idea, and he went behind his computer, and he did it. And the fruits of it, it's pretty interesting. I mean, it is a cool ad. It does, you know, whoever side you're on Crooks and Liars, I'm not supporting a candidate. I'm more interested in the smears. The unfounded smears against people.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, it was quite brilliant. And in the age of the Internet, it really is hard to be anonymous. If you do something, invariably somebody's going to find out who did it. And I used to blog. I never actually for months I didn't attach my name to it because I just was Crooks and Liars, and I just decided, you know what, I don't want anybody to know my name.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized that, you know, as my site got more popular, they're going to figure it out sooner or later, and then I just said, you know what, this is me, and it's freeing for me. I want people to know my opinions and who I am and
yeah.
what my site's about.
Well, we can understand why he wanted to obscure his identity, and, you know, I don't have a big problem with that. What I find interesting, and I read this post, I won't reread the whole thing, but this is a woman who posted on a blog at MotherJones.com, and she says, yes, this is a brilliant effort, and lefty bloggers are cheering, but then she compares it to the hit piece on Harold Ford, the Playboy Bunny, I met you at the Playboy Party, hey,
oh,
Harold,
right.
Call me. And she writes, women weren't recognized as fully human in this country till recently. Lefty bloggers who don't think Hillary has the charisma to win the general election may be happy that this ad will derail her in the primary, but they look like hypocrites unless they stop cheering for a moment to mention that the ad operates on bigotry. Now, I didn't pick that up. I don't think it's bigoted. I don't think it's sexist. She's a public figure who happens to be a female, and the ad portrays her as part of the establishment, as Big Brother. I don't find that sexist. Do you?
No, I didn't come across that take, and I don't find like lefties celebrating that this guy attacked Hillary, because I think Hillary's a very viable candidate. Everybody knows pretty much everything there is to know about the Clintons, and there's really no surprises, but our media does demonize her repeatedly. Just the other day, Chris Matthews is talking about her, and he's saying, look at that cold stare she's giving Al Gore. I mean, does a man get that kind of treatment? You know, do they talk about what John McCain's wearing? And, you know, did he give him a steely eye? So I think she's heavily criticized unfairly, but I don't believe that lefty bloggers were celebrating this ad was out. It was just an interesting ad, and whether you agree with the content or his portrayal or his feelings on Hillary's candidacy is for your own, you know, for everyone to make their own decision.
Now, John,
I had
a different reaction to the exchange between Hillary and Gore. On this program, I suggested that if we want to cool the planet, she's got enough ice right there. Now, I want to turn to one other thing before we run out of time. I just picked this article out of the paper today. MoveOn has now sued Viacom because they created a video called Stop the Falsiness, which was a play on Stephen Colbert's truthiness line.
Uh-huh.
This is a video they made to promote the appearance of one of the MoveOn people on the Colbert Report. And it included some snippets from the Colbert Report itself. And Viacom included them in their $1 billion lawsuit against YouTube and Google. And now MoveOn is fighting back. We're getting into a real murky area now with the rights to videos and the ability of individuals to record, edit, and alter content that was presumably copyrighted.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, for my sake, since I do a lot of video, I've taken this very seriously, and I've talked to a lot of lawyers. Now, in YouTube's case, to me, a lot of what they do, if you go, you know, you look at the letter of the law, it is really copyright violation because they're just putting up somebody's content. In other words, there's no commentary, there's no discussion. It's just taking something and putting it up and disseminating it. Whereas on a bunch of blogs, we'll take a piece, let's say a minute, 2 minutes, of, let's say, you know, Giuliani or McCain, and we have a, you know, vibrant discussion and we write a big commentary about it, well, then that's covered under the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so there's just, there's, it's interesting, Viacom tried to work out a deal with YouTube, and they asked them to pull AS clips down. They didn't. So now this whole big umbrella action's going on, and it's pretty interesting. And I don't know if you know, but NBC and Fox or News Corp signed a deal.
Strange bedfellows.
It's strange, especially O'Reilly considers NBC, you know, liberal smear merch.
Ah!
And now they're in bed going to do their own sort of YouTube. It's just hysterical.
It really is. Hey, John, keep up the good work. What's hot on Crooks and Liars right now? What should people go looking for?
The site, we've been getting, 200,000 people a day the last couple of days. Murtha Speaks, which he just gave a really passionate speech before the Iraq vote.
Mm-hmm.
Rep Obi, when he slammed the Washington Post editorial board, is going like wild.
And I saw Bush's news conference, too.
Barbara Boxer.
Out of time, John. Thank you very much. John Amato, crooksandliars.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's a taste you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a Baba Ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Pina Envy. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. The president made it clear Congress better not subpoena his people to explain why those U.S. attorneys were fired, or he'll withdraw his generous offer to allow unsworn, untranscripted private interviews. The response of the Senate Judiciary Committee?
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I would say the ayes have it. The subpoenas are authorized.
Judging by those anemic no's, even the Republicans seem to know this is not going to turn out well. But Republican Senator Tom Coburn deserves a gold star for effort.
There's no doubt all of these U.S. attorneys were stellar in their performance.
He acknowledges the firings were probably political.
But political doesn't necessarily denote illegal, wrongful, or unjust.
No, there might be other good reasons to get rid of a U.S. attorney. Such as?
In the case of Arkansas, the idea was to give somebody else a shot.
To give somebody else a shot! You can't just let your best players hog all the playing time. In the case of Arkansas, it was the turn of Tim Griffin, a protege of Karl Rove. And as for the idea that the White House is being stubborn about the subpoena issue, Senator Coburn drew an example from his own life.
A no is not always a no. My wife said no the first four times I tried to take her out on a date.
She was a wise woman.
Well, she hadn't said no for the last 39 years.
At which point, the committee quickly voted to end the metaphor. That vote, I believe, was bipartisan and unanimous. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging. And the fastest way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's spam, firewalls, and web filters. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now and ask for your free trial. Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use. That's why over 35,000 leading companies are using the award-winning firewall. Try a Barracuda firewall for free. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. Hey, hey, we're Republicans, and people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news.
Well, I actually turned on the morning news on MSNBC about 9 o'clock Pacific time today and got my first whiff of an interesting incident in the Persian Gulf. Joining us to talk about it is reporter Reese Ehrlich. He's got a new book coming out soon called The Iran Agenda, The Real Story of U.S. Policy in the Middle East Crisis. Has a piece in the current issue of Mother Jones that we'll reference here in a moment. Reese Ehrlich, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you very much, Peter. Was that you singing there?
No, that wasn't.
Oh, gosh.
Would you like a copy of that? It's something ripped off from the monkeys.
I'm not sure if the guy was hitting all the notes, but I like the sentiment of the content.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's I have no idea where it came from. People email me tunes like that, and someday I'm sure the copyright police will knock on the door.
That's right, and then you actually play it on the air.
Say, where'd that come from? Reese, this is a curious incident, and let me try to reconstruct it here from a CNN report and then clarify anything to the extent you can. An Iranian naval patrol has now seized 15 British Marines and sailors. The Royal Marines and naval officers were believed to have been apprehended by up to 6 ships from the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. Now, the Brits, who were they were deployed from the frigate, the HMS Cornwall, were out there investigating. They had stopped a ship that they thought was trying to smuggle cars into Iraq. But somehow they appeared to have drifted into Iranian waters, and this Iranian flotilla surrounded them and picked them up. Is this accurate?
It is accurate to the extent that that information comes from British and American sources.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing to keep in mind at this early stage of these kind of crises, is that the information frequently is, and critical details frequently prove to be wrong or missing key ingredients and so on. And we've seen that. You may recall back in 1988 when the U.S. shot down the Iranian airliner.
Yeah.
And the initial reports was that the ship, the USS Vincennes, had been under attack, and they thought it was a war plane, and then they had all kinds of excuses, and what it turns out is they shot an innocent plane out of the air, a plane full of innocent civilians. What you have described is exactly what the Western and British media are reporting so far, and that's the best information we have to go on. The Iranians have not said a lot about it so far. They have said that the ship was in Iranian waters, and the British dispute that. They say they were in Iraqi waters.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the one hand, when you're out there on the Persian Gulf, there is not like a big white line that says, international waters, Iranian waters. However, with GPS and other navigation systems, it should be very easy for the British to clarify if, in fact, they were in international waters or had trespassed, right?
Yes, at least in theory. By the way, this was along the Shat al-Arab waterway, which is basically a big river that runs between Iran and Iraq. I've been there and seen it, and it's there's not a lot of space in certain places that would indicate, you know, which side you're on. Basically, the line runs down the middle of the river between the two countries, and you're supposed to stay on your side. But you're right. If the Iranians apparently have seized their patrol boat that they were on, and so that would presumably have the history of the GPS markings on it and readings, and if you took a look at that, you should be able to tell whose side they were on.
Now, describe, since you've been there, this area and the river-like zone that you're describing, and how wide is it, and is it easy enough just to drift from one side to the other and accidentally cross over?
Sure. The answer is yes. It is, at places, very narrow. Like, the, you know, you can see from one side of the shore to the other. You know, it's that narrow. Other places, it's several, it's a number of miles wide.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when you get down at the bottom of the waterway, you get to the Straits of Hormuz and out into the Persian Gulf, and then you've got basically open seas. I have not read any press reports as to exactly where this incident took place.
Mm-hmm.
That may be coming out in the days ahead.
The other example that I would offer is just last summer at Sheba Farms, where the incident occurred between Hezbollah militia and members of the Israeli military, and a soldier was captured in that exchange. And there was, you know, for several days, even a couple of weeks, it was unclear as to exactly whose side of the border the incidents, there was an original incident and then a follow-up. It was very difficult to discern from here exactly where it occurred and therefore who trespassed against whom.
That's absolutely true. And that was on land where the borders are much more clearly demarcated. I've been to that part of the world also.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot easier to figure out there. And of course, the problem is it's a political problem. It's not a geographic one, which is each side wants to claim that the other was in its territory and thus justifying whatever actions they take. I think it's worth taking a step back for a moment from the particulars and look at recent, just the last couple months in the region.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. has been on a concerted campaign to drum up antagonism towards Iran. The U.S. has sent two aircraft carrier groups to the Persian Gulf as direct threats to Iran. They've arrested Iranian diplomats in northern Iraq, claiming that they were Revolutionary Guards and other people that are doing funny things in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And they have stepped up terrorist bombings and other kinds of terrorist attacks inside Iran, sponsored by ethnic minorities in Iran in the pay or in with the support of various U.S. intelligence agencies.
And let's not forget that bizarre news conference Sunday about a month ago, held in Baghdad, where officials who would not permit themselves to be named or photographed offered evidence that was quite suspicious, trying to point a finger at Iran for providing these munitions, the shaped explosives.
Right, which turned out to be available commercially and in various other countries around the region.
Well, they claimed that the technology wasn't available in Iraq, and then, about 2 weeks later, a factory was discovered making these kind of ceramic discs that were used as the projectile in these explosive devices.
That intelligence that was presented at that press conference is right up there with Tonkin Gulf and the Iran, Iraq's nuclear weapons prior to the invasion, a whole bunch of other history of cooked intelligence by the United States.
So, Reese, you are appropriately skeptical, and I share that. We have been talking about these issues with Colonel Sam Gardner, Michael Scheuer, many well-informed people. We've never gotten Cy Hirsch on the program, but we've read his material and referenced it. And I'm very concerned, as you are, that the U.S. is looking for an event that can be construed as a provocation for a need to attack Iran. And it had appeared that the proxy was going to be Israel. We saw these reports over the last 2 months, mostly from the British press, talking about practice air raids that they had conducted, a request to clear Iraqi airspace by Israeli fighter jets, presumably for a potential attack on Iranian nuclear facilities.
I think the way to look at that propaganda, which was being leaked out of Israel, was that that was not so much a threat that Israel would unilaterally attack Iran, but rather a effort to step up political pressure on the U.S. for the U.S. to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Israel is neither politically nor even militarily in a position to carry out the kind of attacks that would be envisioned by the neocons, and the Israelis want the U.S. to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
And further proof of that was that this vote that just took place in Congress today about the Iraq funding,
right.
Originally it had a provision, that, a very simple one, which would require Bush to come to Congress if he was going to launch a military attack against Iran. That's just the ABCs of the American Constitution.
Right.
That provision was removed directly under political pressure from AIPAC, which is the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the main pro-Israel lobby in the United States. Israel is very, very intent on the U.S. attacking Iran, and I think it would be a disaster for the people of Israel, not to mention the people of the United States and the people of Iran.
Yeah, no, I agree. So what is your current thinking, and based on the sources you have? I know you've been to Iran. You've got this book coming out. You also profiled some interesting Kurdish-related fighters in the current issue of Mother Jones magazine. And we've had prior reports on this program about the MEK, the Mujahideen al-Khalq, which we think are now mercenaries hired by the United States operating covertly inside the borders of Iran. So as you assess this, do you see this as a critical event that we're talking about today?
Yes, and it's very complicated, so I hope your listeners will bear with me. I don't want to throw too many acronyms and too many strange groups at them all at once. But the basic story is the United States is paying various ethnic minorities living in exile or even in some cases inside Iran to carry out terrorist attacks inside Iran. That's the bottom line. And we saw it most recently when a bus full of Revolutionary Guards was blown up and a number of people were killed in Balochistan, which is the part of Iran that's near the Pakistani border.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw similar things in Khuzestan, where there was office buildings blown up and innocent civilians killed last year and the year before. And the same thing, I got up into the Kandil Mountains in Iraq, where the Kurdish, it's the area of Iraq that's controlled by the Kurds, and the Iranian Kurds have bases there. And one of the groups, it's called PJAK, and it's an affiliate very closely with the PKK, Kurdistan Workers' Party.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And basically, the U.S. is sponsoring, and Israel both, are sponsoring these that particular guerrilla group to go into Iran and carry out armed struggle against the Iranians. And the idea is to harass Iran. The U.S. is smart enough to know that such groups aren't going to overthrow the government.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're hoping is that by carrying out these terrorist attacks, it will cause the Iranian government to crack down to increase its repression against the minorities. The minority people of Iran have very legitimate concerns, criticisms, grievances against the central government, and they're hoping to fan that up in a way that will weaken the government and bring in a pro-U.S. government. That's the bottom line of what the U.S. is up to.
Now, not to distract from the more important issues here, but you point out this is entitled The Celibates of Ocalan, that this group is almost half female. And they all have, as you put it, eschewed sex. And I'm just wondering if this is, you know, part of the Bush administration's faith-based initiative to promote abstinence in all cases.
Well, you know, I didn't have the heart to ask them. But what I can tell you is that is their official policy, no sex among the guerrillas. It gets awful cold up there in the Kandil Mountains. So I just question how thoroughly that policy is actually carried out.
All right. Dave in Eureka has a question for you. Dave, join us. It's Peter B. and Reese Ehrlich.
Hey, Reese and Peter. The question that I'm having is, would not the British frigate be equipped with some form of radar, and would it not have seen the Iranian frigate approaching? And if they wanted not to have the encounter, would they not have exited the area promptly?
Well, you would think so, but it's a little bit more complicated in practice. What it is that apparently this was a smaller patrol boat that left the HMS Cornwall, which was the large naval ship in the area, and it was the British Marines had boarded a commercial ship, at least according to the press accounts, in order to search for smuggled goods, and it was on that smaller ship that merchant ship that was surrounded by patrol boats from Iran, and the Marines were forced off. I think it's plausible because a similar incident happened about 2 years ago in the same general area. And basically the Marines faced a situation of superior force, and if they started fighting, they would have, certainly many of them would have gotten killed and injured. So, I find it credible that it was not part of a plan by the British. I think the Iranian Revolutionary Guards outfoxed them.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate the question. We'll continue in just a moment with Reese Ehrlich, and I'm going to ask him his comments on the vote in the House today. He already referenced that they stripped out the ban on an attack on Iran without further congressional approval. We'll talk about other aspects of this package coming up next, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
For over 30 years, I have been helping people restore their skin's natural beauty. This is Claudie Assalit of Claudie Skincare Studio in Carmel. I bring a certain je ne sais quoi, as well as 3 decades of experience in top spas and salons. Claudie Skincare Studio features a selection of the finest products, and I am always training to stay at the cutting edge of skincare technology. At Claudie Skincare Studio, we specialize in healing facials, peels, Reiki, waxing, lash tinting, as well as nutritional advice to ensure your skin vibrancy and good health. To set up an appointment, call me Claudie Assalit at 625-4101. That is 625-4101. Smooth, soft, beautiful skin can be yours. Call 625-4101. A bientôt.
One Day Income Tax Service, family owned and operated since 1944, specializes in year-round professional tax preparation. Do you want your refund quickly? Stop by One Day Income Tax Service. They offer tax preparation at reasonable rates and work to meet the needs of military families with the capacity to process all out-of-state returns. If you prefer to prepare your own return at home, they can help you expedite your refund by filing your return electronically. Let One Day Income Tax Service assist you with your return and maximize your refund. Stop by 885 Broadway Avenue in Seaside, where no appointment is necessary. Looking for quick, professional, and reasonable tax return preparation? Visit One Day Income Tax Service, 885 Broadway Avenue, Seaside, or call 394-8010. That's 831-394-8010. One Day Income Tax Service, where you walk in with a copy of your most recent tax return, personal ID, and W-2 1099 info for 2006, and you walk out with your completed tax return.
And a very pleasant good afternoon to you. Let's take a look at the latest and tell you that we do have a problem. Let's see. This is in Monterey, eastbound 68. Highway 68, Stafford York Road. We've got a pallet of, it looks like wood of some sort, in the lanes reported there, thanks to one of our cellular callers who gave us that information. Also want to take a look at Highway 17. What I can tell you is that there's absolutely no problems, which is always good news, so it's moving well in both directions. Quick problem in Morgan Hill, southbound 101 before Cochrane. 2-vehicle crash in the scene. CHP, in fact, on scene. Let's give you some updates regarding some construction. Northbound 101 between Mark Street and 17. Left lane closed from Julian. That's going to last till about 5. It starts actually from 8 p.m. to 5 a.m., and that'll end the 23rd of March. Support brought to you by J.C. Penney's.
U.S. carriers on alert in the Persian Gulf. Are we facing a Top Gun moment? I'm Peter B. Collins. We're talking with journalist Reese Ehrlich. He's got a new book coming out called The Iran Agenda, The Real Story of U.S. Policy in the Middle East Crisis. When's that coming out, Reese? Give us the elevator pitch.
That will be on in September.
September.
Exciting book telling you everything you wanted to know about what Bush's policies really are towards Iran. Hidden story.
Great. Publisher is?
Polypoint Press in Sausalito.
Oh, Polypoint. Yeah, that's a great outfit.
Good stuff.
Yeah. I can't remember the publisher's name, but he is a winemaker, too. I was there one time for a little festivities, and he brought out some of his own stuff. It was really good.
Well, isn't that a great combination, books and wine?
Yeah. Now, I want to turn to the events in the House of Representatives today. I'm generally a supporter of Nancy Pelosi. I've known her for a long time, and I identify her as a true progressive. I take her at her word. In her closing debate comments this morning, that this is the Iraq war is a grotesque mistake. And I also believe that she's doing her best under the circumstances to unify the Democrats, and she did squeak through with this vote today. And it's better than nothing in some respects, but I think it will ultimately amount to nothing because it's going to be watered down by the Senate, and I would take the president at his word that he plans to veto this. And so I think that ultimately they will be confronted with the stark choice of cutting off funding or continuing to write checks for this president's misbegotten, misguided war. What are your thoughts, Reese?
Well, I would just add one more thing to that, which is that no matter what the House, the Senate, or the president does, the war in Iraq is lost to the United States and has been for some time, and that the carnage, the killing of innocent Iraqi civilians, the death of more American soldiers, is going to continue.
And just one example, the footage from the Green Zone yesterday where Ban Ki-moon, the new UN Secretary General, came and was sharing a dais there with Maliki, and some sort of a rocket hit about 50 yards behind him. And that's in the Green Zone.
Yes, exactly. And there's roughly 10% of the Iraqi population now has fled the country, over 500,000 in Syria, and nearly double that in Jordan. It is a complete chaotic mess right now in Iraq, and I think it's positive any vote in the House or the Senate that's critical of the war policy. The House should be voting to cut off the funding for the war and to prevent any future attacks on Iran as well. But apparently, of course, the Republicans oppose that and a sector of the Democrats. So that's not the going to be the vote anytime soon. There's some very principled people like Dennis Kucinich and Barbara Lee and others who have taken a very consistent anti-war stance all along. And I just think that in some ways it's irrelevant what the House does or even what Bush does.
Well, and I would like to see action that is really more effective by either putting the president on an allowance and, you know, give him $10 billion a month and say, you know, this is not going to continue. Because, again, the purse strings are the only real power the Congress has, and these bills originate in the House. And so if they originate a bill with very limited funding and make it clear that that's for the troops because they've made a pledge, which I think was a mistake, to never do anything that would, quote-unquote, hurt the troops, this $100 billion, you know, very little of it would actually trickle down to the troops in any meaningful way, and yet they permit the opposition to characterize it that way.
Well, I think what the problem is there's a sector of conservative Democrats in the House and the Senate, as well as so-called moderates, and a chunk of those are very much beholden to the pro-Israel lobby, that sector of folks doesn't really want to see the Iraq war end, and or they're afraid of being blamed for the U.S. losing.
And is there a nexus between the Blue Dogs and AIPAC in your view?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. No, that I mean, we mentioned it a bit earlier, but to her credit, Nancy Pelosi had and others had made sure there was a section in this bill prohibiting the bombing of Iran.
And it was even, you know, it wasn't even all that strong. All it was doing was upholding the congressional power of Congress. It said that it didn't prohibit a military attack on Iran. It just said Bush had to come to get a vote through Congress.
Yeah, would you ask? Pretty please.
Yeah, exactly. And he might, you know, knowing this Congress, he might even have gotten it. But even that kind of just restatement of the constitutional principles of the United States was pulled out under direct pressure from AIPAC and from the, and that co-joined nicely with the Blue Dog Democrats, the so-called Blue Dog Democrats, the more conservative wing of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, it's very strange, which is Bush trying to keep the war going until he's out of office so that he can't be blamed for losing the war, and then sticking whoever the next president is with the mess of trying to clean up the situation. And we saw that, you know, I mean, Nixon and Ford are certainly as responsible for the war in Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
And history remembers them that way. It's not like, oh, Nixon got out of office, so he wasn't responsible for the Vietnam War. Well, Bush, this was, in a very real sense, Bush's war, and he's going to be remembered in history, not just for the war, but for really seriously weakening the United States all around the world.
Yeah, Reese Ehrlich, thank you for joining us today. We'll look for your book in the fall, The Iran Agenda, and I appreciate your comments.
Thank you so much.
Brad Friedman joins us next from bradblog.com, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. The death of football star-turned-soldier Pat Tillman, already controversial, the truth of his friendly fire death in Afghanistan nearly 4 years ago, and now the cover-up at very high levels.
CBS News has learned an investigation by the Pentagon's Inspector General will blame 9 officers, including 4 generals, for failing to follow regulations and using poor judgment in a series of missteps that kept the truth of how he died from his family for more than a month.
That's CBS News correspondent David Martin. This is CBS News military analyst Mike Lyon.
The fact that general officers are involved really leads you to think that there's a conspiracy someplace to keep this kind of information from the family is really uncalled for.
In Congress, a close vote today to set a date to end American military involvement in Iraq by September of 2008.
Democratic leaders struggled to win the vote, aligning those who've opposed the war from the start and wanted a quicker end with those like Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, who started out in support of the war but now favors the deadline.
None of us who voted for the original authorization voted to put our troops in the middle of a civil war. Not one of us.
The issue now moves to the Senate, where Democrats are backing a similar measure with a 1-year deadline for getting the troops out. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
I'm Mark Noller at the White House. The president announced the House vote as an act of political theater. He accused Democrats of trying to substitute their judgment for that of American commanders in Iraq. He rejected the bill's timeline for U.S. withdrawal from Iraq and declared that the measure has no chance of becoming law. Should it reach his desk, he'll veto it, and he said he's got the votes in Congress to sustain it.
White House spokesman Tony Snow is heading to the hospital.
In a recent series of CAT scans and PET scans and MRIs, we have found a small growth in my lower abdomen. Blood tests are negative, PET scans are negative, but out of an aggressive sense of caution, I'm going to go in for surgery on Monday and have it removed.
The pet food recall being expanded.
The previous recall was between December 3rd and March 6th. Now it is regardless of the date on the container. Those are all being recalled.
The FDA's Dr. Steven Sundloff, a substance used as a rat killer turning up in the tainted food.
How did this substance get into our products? At this stage, we don't know.
Paul Henderson, president of Menu Few Foods, a manufacturer of the offending pet food.
May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please?
M&M will ask a judge Monday to do something to stop his ex-wife from saying bad things about him in public. Kim Mathers telling a radio station in Detroit that M&M cheated on her and that he was lousy in bed. Wall Street carving out a modest gain today after a surprise jump in sales of existing homes. The Dow finishing up nearly 20 points at 12,481. This is CBS News.
Ever wonder when buying a used car if you're just buying a used problem? Not if it's a Honda-certified used car. They're well-maintained late-model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then backed by a 7-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty from the original in-service date, and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. And now get low APR financing on all certified used Honda Odyssey and Pilot models. It may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
Have you ever found a penny on the ground? Of course you have. Well, imagine that for the next 50,000 steps you take, there's always a penny at your feet. Feels like that.
Have you ever put on a pair of clean pants and found a $20 bill in the pocket? Man, that's a good feeling, right? Well, take that feeling and multiply it by 25 pairs of pants, and you're close.
New GEICO customers report average annual savings of $500 on their car insurance. Discover how it feels and how much you could save. Go to GEICO.com. Simple as that.
He was one of the more mysterious personalities of the 20th century. The death of Harry Houdini has always been shrouded in mystery as well. Was he poisoned? There are efforts to exhume his body and find out.
The authors of a new book point to threatening letters from Houdini's many enemies in the crystal ball crowd. Houdini was suffering from symptoms consistent with poisoning, they say. Forensic expert Dr. James Starrs believes even after 80 years, the remains can yield evidence.
What we're going to be doing, certainly, is fleshing out Harry Houdini's. And we may also know, hopefully, a great deal more about his death.
Houdini's great-nephew supports the effort to settle the argument some experts have made for years that the magician could not have died from a burst appendix brought on by blows to the stomach. Paul Murnane, CBS News, New York.
Regis Philbin says he thinks he's through the worst of it more than a week after triple bypass heart surgery. He called in today, live with Regis and Kelly, to update his condition. He's expected to be out for at least another month. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Thanks for helping me move, Liz.
Sure.
Time for that California Chardonnay we love.
Ooh, Corbett Canyon?
Canyon.
But we're never going to find a corkscrew.
Oh, don't need one. Got the Corbett Canyon Premium Wine Cap.
Clever.
Keeps air out, flavor in. Just turn the tap for a glass of crisp, refreshing Chardonnay.
Mm.
And get this. After it's opened, keeps wine fresh for 6 weeks.
Bet a woman invented it.
Why is that?
Clever, practical, don't need a tool to open it.
Good taste is worth repeating. The Premium Wine Cask from Corbett Canyon. Corbett Canyon Vineyard, San Luis Obispo, California.
And now for the bonus round. If second place is the first loser, who came in last?
Billy.
Correct. Nothing rhymes with orange. What color are my boxers?
Duh, they're blue.
Correct. What's the affordable way to rent DVDs?
Netflix, with plans from only $4.99 a month.
Correct! Netflix! Choose your movies online and get DVDs delivered to your door in about one business day. Plans now from only $4.99 a month and never a late fee. Start your free trial today. Netflix, it's that easy.
Live from San Francisco, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Lively, informative, compelling, progressive talk radio. And it's interactive, too, which is a fancy way of saying he takes your phone calls. Toll free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. Fasten your seatbelt and let's take a ride in Peter B.'s America.
That's affirmative, Brent. Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B.
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within.
That's a power hit from the summer of 1970 by the Undisputed Truth. There's an 18-minute version that the Temptations did on Sky's the Limit. you ever have a chance, it's a real gem. Pick it up. It's time for a Bradcast here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Every Friday, we talk with Brad Friedman, who is the proprietor of the green ink stained bradblog.com. Hello, Brad.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. Just to reconnoiter, I got your message, and yes, that's fine.
Okay, good.
We'll do that on the half hour, and you want to go ahead and tell us where Ms. Levy is?
Well, yes, Emily Levy from VelvetRevolution.us is out there in D.C. today, where they're having all-day hearings on this new Rush-Holt election reform bill, 811. And she was helping out one of the folks who testified, Noel Runyon, who is a blind technology activist we may have talked about last week.
Yeah.
Not activist, a technology expert, who has called for an immediate ban to DRE, touchscreen voting, and has had a bunch of disabled, blind and disabled voter rights advocates join him in that call. And he testified today before Congress, as did Rush Holt, People for the American Way, Deborah Bowen, on and on, a huge list. And hopefully Emily will be calling in at the bottom of the hour from D.C. with an update on what went on in D.C. today.
Well, that'll be great. Now, Brad, you and I talk on Fridays. We sometimes email in between. But Brad Blog has been in my face, in a good way, in several instances this week. First of all, I saw that you had signed the online petition supporting Sybil Edmonds, the whistleblower from the FBI, who wants Henry Waxman to activate his promise to call her with a subpoena under oath to testify about what she's dying to tell us but can't because she's under this bizarre gag order from a federal court. And I just wanted to commend you for that. We've been on the Sybil Edmonds story from day one. She was on with us this past Monday. And I just consider her an inspiring, courageous American who deserves to be fully heard.
Courageous indeed. And not only on her own behalf in order to try to tell her story about what she heard while serving as a translator at the FBI shortly after 9/11, but also having formed the National Security Whistleblowers Organization and providing support for so many of these folks now who are coming out of the FBI, CIA, National, the NSA, et cetera, wanting to tell their stories of the, what should we call it, malfeasance, corruption, and everything else that they have seen. And I we report on a lot of whistleblowers at Brad Blog, and I've spoken to a lot of them. Many of them have been able to come out on the record. Others are sources or anonymous sources publicly. There is no joy in being a whistleblower.
Yeah.
A whistleblower does not look good on your resume when you go to get work.
Yep, indeed.
And so I commend her for that. And all of those folks who have had the courage to step forward and talk about what they know and suffer the slings and arrows that unfortunately comes with it.
Yeah. The other thing that's been ricocheting through my email from various sources is your online, quote-unquote, debate with Ralph Nies from People for the American Way. And by the way, we did invite Ralph Nies on the program today. We were told he's traveling. They didn't reject our request, so we will pursue it and see if perhaps next week we can get him to join us. But why don't you describe for us, first of all, I want to commend you. Because I've read, I believe, the entire piece actually twice now. And you are very firm in your position. You're very clear in your arguments. And you're very restrained in your tone.
Well, thank you. I take no joy, frankly, in coming out to discuss these matters with folks who I essentially consider to be a good guy, the good guys. You know, folks like People for the American Way and Common Cause and Vote Trust USA and Move On. And I've tried to work in the background to find the common ground so that the thing that we all believe in, and I believe that they do share the interest in election integrity and certainly in election reform. So I don't like, sort of coming out and, I don't want to call it attacking, but, sort of calling out some of these folks who, as I say, are the good guys. But in this case, what has become clear to me over the past many weeks and months as I've been working and we've talked about sort of drilling down to figure out what the heck is going on here and why so many of these groups faced with this, in many ways, very good election reform bill that is finally working its way through Congress and may actually get passed this time, why so many of those folks are against calling for one of the most important things that any election reform legislation should have, and that is a ban on the use of these direct recording electronic DRE voting systems, mm-hmm. usually touchscreen voting systems. And what I've now come to understand with PFAW, People for the American Way, and this is different from even Common Cause and Move On, not only is PFAW against a ban on DREs in the bill, an amendment to the Holt bill to ban DREs, they actually seem to be advocating for the use of this technology. And that's different than what we've seen in the past. That's different than, you know, Move On and Common Cause, and I'm not even sure a lot of these people understand that. But through my discussions with the folks at People for the American Way, and you know, Ralph Knees, the executive director, directly, and then his interview last weekend with Bobby Kennedy and Mike Papantonio on a Ring of Fire show,
mm-hmm.
they made it clear what I had heard from one of them privately prior to that, was that they would be happy to see, for example, Los Angeles County, the millions of voters that we have here. I'm in Los Angeles, and we've got a paper-based IncaVote system. Now, it's not a great system, but at least it's a paper-based, paper ballot system.
Mm-hmm.
They've made it clear that they would be happy to see that paper-based system in Los Angeles, with all of our millions of voters, turned to a DRE touchscreen system. Now, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah.
What is that about? And, you know, I felt I had to call them out on this and say, hey, what's going on here? And I continue to do that, and there continues to be reverberations. I'm glad you're hearing about it on your end via email. This is not good, and it's particularly not good because almost everybody who I've spoken with in this debate, whether it's the public advocacy groups, Congress, et cetera, they all point back to PFAW. And they say, hey, you know, if PFAW would call for a DRE ban, we'd be in favor of it. So they have a lot of power in Congress, and they seem to be behind a lot of you know, the policy decisions that are being made by groups like Move On and Common Cause, et cetera. And I think it's a hell of a troubling position, and I suspect that some of those groups, Common Cause, Move On, they're against DREs. I've seen them, you know, their folks say, you know, we loathe DREs. We don't think we should use them, but we're worried that if we include a DRE ban in the bill, it won't pass. I have not seen them advocate for the use of DREs, and that is what I am now coming to understand from PFAW.
Mm-hmm.
Damn dangerous, in my opinion.
Well, and particularly, this is not directly related, but I think it's an interesting parallel. Charlie Crist is the new Republican governor of Florida, succeeding Jeb Bush, and he has called for a complete replacement of the touchscreen machines in Florida. Now, if a Republican governor who you would expect wanted to play ball, and if fixing elections is part of the Republican playbook, he ain't playing with that playbook. He's on a different page.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I even understand that his position has evolved since what it was originally. He was ahead of this, got ahead of groups like PFAW and the Democrats. And for that, I think the Democrats should be ashamed of themselves. But what Crist had originally called for when he came into office was replacing all of the touchscreen systems used on Election Day with paper-based optical scan systems. But they were going to continue using the DREs in early voting and for the disabled. Well, now I'm just getting information, and Emily may be able to clarify this when she calls in. Crist testified today, and my understanding is they may be preparing to use this new ballot on-demand technology that essentially prints out a paper ballot in any language that you need for mm-hmm. whichever jurisdiction you need, and would mean that even in early voting, they could go to an all paper-based system.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need to see is, frankly, that sort of forward thinking. And you're right. I think it's to the shame of many of these Democrats and their public advocacy group supporters that they're letting a guy like Charlie Crist, Republican governor of Florida, get ahead of them on this
one. Brad, we're going to take a break. We'll talk more about this when Emily Levy joins us in about 15 minutes. And in the meantime, in our next segment, I'm expecting a call from Larry in Monterey, who was there at an interesting meeting regarding voting processes and the machines earlier this week in Monterey County. If you want to call the program, lines are open, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. And as usual, Brad Friedman is here the entire hour from bradblog.com. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
And a very pleasant good afternoon to you. Let's take a look at the latest. And pretty quiet, to be honest with you. Let's take a look at Highway 17. No major stalls or accidents. I do have a little bit of news to report. Southbound 1 slows between Monterey and Carmel. Eastbound 25, some slow-and-go traffic out of Gilroy into Hollister. And even eastbound 129, reports of a little bit of slow traffic between Watsonville and Aromas. Also got a quick reminder that in Watsonville, 152 eastbound between Highway 1 and Main Street, road construction has the two left lanes shut down 24 hours a day, and that'll be reopened. Actually, don't have an indication of when that'll be reopened. But I do know this report is brought to you by our friendly folks at JCPenney's. Come to the men's store in JCPenney's now through Monday and get 40% off their entire stock of men's and tall sports shirts and shorts. Finding what fits matters every day at JCPenney's.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Checking the integrity of your voting process.
Tuesday in November, took that stroll to cast my ballot at the local poll. The lines were long, but I didn't care. I had water, a hat, and my folding chair. Walked up to the booth, didn't say a word. Sure that my voice would be heard. I hit that button, my vote was sent. But now nobody knows exactly where it went.
They lost my vote.
It isn't fair. I took a stand. Doesn't anybody care?
We continue now with Brad Friedman here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you want to join in, call us toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. And Brad, we're joined by Larry from Carmel Valley. Larry, welcome to the show.
How you doing, Peter?
Thanks for checking in with us. And you and Chris, who's also on the line, we'll get to him shortly, attended this meeting. It was on Tuesday this week, right?
That's right.
And this was a meeting of various political officials, including Vince Kohler from the Monterey County Central Democratic Committee.
Yeah.
And also the election officials in Monterey County. And tell us what the agenda was and how things went.
Well, the meeting was actually the Voting Rights Committee of the Board of Supervisors,
okay.
And it was attended by Democrats, Republicans, and the League of Women Voters people and several other groups. And what we're I'm with a group called Save Elections Monterey County,
mm-hmm.
And we've been trying to communicate with the Board of Supervisors to get rid of our electronic systems. And we met with each supervisor previous to this meeting and met as a group with the meeting and gave a presentation,
mm-hmm.
Sort of a presentation. And it was a positive meeting, but it's hard to really get into these things in, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. And
yeah.
eight or nine of us spoke, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
Whether or not they're getting it or not is hard to say.
Now, from the email that I got from you and from Chris, his report indicates that Vince Kohler took the position that it's not so much the machines, it's a need for greater training of poll workers and kind of a systems approach as opposed to really looking at the vulnerability of the system itself.
Well, Vince, like many people, just don't have a full understanding of the depth of the problems, you know. The electronic problems.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks it's just long lines and you know, things like that. But as you know and Brad know, it is the electronics and the vulnerability.
Well, and the processes, the sleepovers. I mean, there's security issues. There's the hackability.
Sure.
The promise of the paper trail is something that doesn't secure these systems as people would hope. Brad, do you want to comment?
Yeah, well, it seems from my understanding, my recollection of that email and that report of Vince. Now, Vince was the Democratic
Central Committee Chair.
Central Committee Chair,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for a start, he's certainly far, far behind Deborah Bowen, new Secretary of State here, who came out with some remarkable stuff this week.
Yeah.
But I was quite alarmed to see what he said, knowing the type of system you guys use. As I recall, it's those Sequoia touchscreen machines.
Yep.
With the secret yellow button on
yeah,
the back.
Yeah, exactly.
And for him to not really understand the threat and the concern, particularly with the record of election registrars that you guys have had out there in Monterey County,
yeah.
Was quite alarming.
Well, you know, we are going to meet with Vince next week and his group, and he is going to set up a little subcommittee within his organization, and we're going to meet with them and hopefully enlighten them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's give them the benefit of the doubt for about 5 minutes here and say that, okay, they must have been reading the mainstream media instead of the Brad blog, and they don't know how damn dangerous those systems are, and you guys go to school on them, give them a chance to understand what's going on, and hopefully they'll change that position and change it quickly.
Yeah. We're kind of in a process of trying to reach out to other groups and other folks right now. You know, we've kind of did our thing so far with the Board of Supervisors, and mm-hmm. We have to do more with them, but in addition to that, we're going to have to reach out to other people in the community and
yeah.
get more support.
Well, Larry, thanks for your activism, and thanks for being a well-informed activist as well.
Do I have time to bring up one more item?
Yeah, real quick, and then I want to go to Chris.
Okay, Deborah Bowen just yesterday released her her draft criteria mm-hmm. for her voting machine review,
yep.
and she's asking for all interested people, anybody, activists, officials, anybody else who has an opinion, to offer an opinion in writing up this criteria. And
there's a great story about it at Brad Blog where you can get the details, and if yeah. we have time, we'll touch on that a little bit later in the hour. Thanks, Larry. Okay. Now to Chris and Salinas. Hey, Chris, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Good. You had a quick question?
Well, I could add a little to what Larry was talking about. And the meeting, what they want to do is they want to spend $360,000 or $70,000 on more printers for the Sequoia machines, because they say that they need to add the printers to lessen the line, because the printers were running out of paper, and once they ran out of paper, the machine became disabled. So they want to spend, $365,000 or so for more printers, rather than just saying, hey, let's go to paper ballots and we don't have to worry about any of this problem.
Yeah, that's throwing good money after bad. Chris, I know you have another question, so hold on, because we're hard on the break here and I just don't want to cut you off. So stand by. We'll get to you when we return. And we're expecting a call from Washington from Emily Levy, who was at the hearing today on the Holt bill. That's H.R. 811. And we'll continue with Brad Friedman in just a moment. So if you want to join us, call in toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. Also, visit the website peterbcollins.com and check out our upgraded archives. Thanks to Brian Urban for adding the touches there. More in a moment here on the PBC Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund as soon as you need it. In 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, the choice is yours. The personnel at Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax return tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today, located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to take a copy of your 2005 federal and California returns and W-2 1099 info for 2006. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today at 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you have the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
I decree that in Peter B.'s America, we vote on paper ballots. And let kids play video games on these damn DREs.
As I was walking over the highway, I saw above me and in the skyway. I saw below me a golden valley. Yeah, this land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled and followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts, and all around me a voice was calling. Yeah, this land was made for land.
We continue our weekly conversation with Brad Friedman, and if you've never been to bradblog.com, you need to fix that pronto. Next time you're online, just type it in, bradblog.com. A lot of powerful information there. And, Brad, we continue. Chris and Salinas got cut off by the break there, and I know he had another question. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, can I say one more thing about the meeting?
Yes, you may.
See, they have a stack or a stash of HALF money that they are itching to spend, and they have to spend it by June, apparently. And he also wants this, not only the $385,000 he wants to spend on the printers, he wants to spend $84,000 on additional warranty that will warranty these through 2011 or something.
Oh, jeez.
Like, and then Deborah Bowen, she had a conference call, and at the very end of her conference call the other day, she said that registrars of voter better beware because she may decertify all of these machines. So he's going to throw all this money at these things and doesn't even know if these machines are going to be certified.
Well, then, so this is a good time, Brad. Can you briefly update us on Deborah Bowen's new standards? And has she publicly offered the comment that Chris just says was on that conference call, that she might decertify the whole shebang?
Well, that much is quite clear. Yesterday, she and it's just two or three stories down from the top over at bradblog.com, but yesterday she issued her criteria, the draft criteria for her first-of-its-kind promised top-to-bottom review of all election systems in California. And, in fact, they are very strict. It's a draft criteria. We'll see if they change. Public comment is currently open right now. I hope they stay the same up and through, I think, April 6th. But it is going to make it very difficult for any of these systems, in particular the touchscreen systems that you guys use out there in Monterey, the Sequoia systems, to be certified by the state of California. And, yeah, I think this guy would be absolutely foolish to buy a whole bunch of new voting hardware right now, given the changes that are promised to be coming from Deborah Bowen. She hopes to finish up everything, I think she said, by the end of August. So they would be absolutely nuts to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars throwing good money after bad at this point on those voting systems.
Can I ask you to comment on the when I read your blog about Ralph Nies?
Yeah.
You mentioned that Holt slipped in a thing where there's a 0% audit or a 0% accountability. Could you explain that? I kind of don't understand what that's about.
Sure. This was a provision that was slipped in at the last second. I had worked with the Holt office throughout the draft process of the bill, doing what I can, putting in, you know, input, suggestions, language changes, much of which they accepted, a lot of which they didn't. But one of the things that they dropped in, there is already in the bill a requirement now, for a federal requirement for an audit procedure that would take place after the election of any of these either paper ballots or paper trails that are used in the election. Now, in most cases, it'll be just a 3% sampling of those ballots will actually be manually checked by hand to determine if there was any fraud. I won't bother for the moment to get into the technicalities of whether that's a large enough percentage, et cetera. Suffice to say, at least there will be an audit of those paper ballots. However, this provision was dropped in at the end that says in the event of a state-mandated recount, in other words, when you've got an election that's close enough that it triggers a state-mandated recount, no audit is required. They don't have to do this federal audit. Now, I think the presumption is that they're going to recount the ballots anyway, so they don't need to do an audit to make sure they're right. The problem is many states, and that would include California, in recounts, are not required to count any of those ballots by hand. We just have a case going on right now in Orange County where they did a recount, and essentially all they did was push the buttons on the machine and get the same numbers again. In an event such as that, and that would really be an event where you would need to audit the ballots the most because they're, you know, it's the race is so close, depending on the state that's doing the recount, you would never have a single paper ballot or paper trail, whatever we want to call it at that point, being examined by hand. And it's just mind-blowing to me. I can't believe that provision got dropped in there at the very end. I don't know what to make of it, but does that clarify the question, Chris?
Yeah, somewhat. I just have one recommendation, is that everybody that sends money to PFAS send it to you instead. That's what I'm doing.
All right, Chris.
All right, take it easy.
Thank you very much. And Brad, I'd just like to add a parenthetical remark here related to both Chris and Larry. It's gratifying to me that listeners to this program and to the work that you, contribute to it are not only paying attention, but they're learning a lot and they're acting on it. And here are two people who have gotten involved in the process, and I have to believe that a lot of it is influenced by what they hear here.
There's no question about it. I mean, I've heard from folks, from your listeners, and I meant to mention this last week, actually, and as long as Chris gave me a free donations plug, I'll take one more. Mm-hmm. Jamie C. up in Pacific Grove had sent a wonderful letter that she listens in every week. She sent a very kind donation in a envelope that was clearly sent from Pacific Grove.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like a hippie sent it. Peace signs and everything. I loved it.
Was there a monarch butterfly in it?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I loved it. I've spoken with your listeners around the country, and by the way, not just where you're on the air, but also people listening on the internet. And
mm-hmm.
you have got, and to your credit, having me come on week after week pounding this drum, your listeners are some of the best informed and have been out there taking action, what they're hearing here and bringing it to their local boards and their states and calling Congress, and that's what's required. This ain't a one-man band, that's for sure. It is the folks on the ground who are making the difference in this fight, and they really are, and I tell everyone everywhere I go, you know, one person does make a difference.
Yeah.
And Chris and Larry holding the feet to the fire out there in Monterey County, I promise you, is going to make a difference in the elections for Monterey County.
Well, and tell them if they buy those voting machines for, you know, or the printers for $350,000, tell them, first of all, you can get them for $50 at Office Depot, and don't use that county credit card, okay?
Oh, boy.
Oh, we got a laugh track here. Victoria, welcome.
Oh, hi, Peter and Brad.
You're on
the
air.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for beating this drum in California, and I'm beating it here in Ohio.
What town in Ohio, Victoria?
I live in Columbus, and I've been an election reform activist for the last 2 years.
Is this Victoria
after I came
Park?
Out of the fetal
yes.
position sometime back in November of 2004.
Well, Victoria,
I had to face the real world.
Thanks for checking in today. Yes, Brad, it is Victoria Parks, and I was born and raised in Ohio, and I left.
Well,
partly because of what cropped up in 2004.
Well, yeah, and let me tell you something, though, about Victoria Parks. You played her song earlier, My Vote Don't Matter Anymore.
Yeah?
That's Victoria Parks.
Oh, okay.
Victoria, thank you for all you're doing out there in Ohio, not just musically, although it's had a great effect, but what you're doing on the ground is just an inspiration to me every day. So thank you, Victoria.
Oh, thank you. And likewise, and it's something we can all do. We are citizens. My life changed on November 2nd, 2004, in a way I did not expect it to. But when you see your democracy being taken from you, right out from under you, with electronic voting machines and voter suppression, it's sort of a call to action, and I had to do something, and so I determined I would be the media. You know, be the media, just like you do with the Brad blog, which is excellent. I get all my information first from the Brad blog. And you're just so up on everything. You're the first source I go to.
Now, Victoria, locally, are you in cahoots with Wasserman and Fetrakis?
I absolutely am. I just had an article published in the Free Press
mm-hmm.
covering the Squire v. Gear trial, which really brings into question in this particular trial the efficacy of the certification process itself. And as Nancy Toby of Democracy for New Hampshire calls it, a Ponzi scheme,
mm-hmm.
We can never get caught up with the certification process. So the software that's actually being used, is it certified or is it not certified?
Well, it's certifiable.
Well, and I will tell you this. I've had conversations because I've been working on an investigative report for a number of months now concerning that very topic. And I will tell you this, what the Elections Assistance Commission, who is currently the federal body supposedly overseeing the certification of all, the federal certification of all voting systems in America, I will tell you exactly what they told me. They told me that no system in use currently in America is federally certified.
We really don't know what software is operating these machines, and that's the bottom line.
And if I can just amend your remark, we don't know, and the people who are running the elections don't know. This is source code that is proprietary to the vendors who are now running our elections.
I will promise you this, that Victoria can walk into virtually any perhaps all, any election county board, a registrar, clerk office, and I'll bet you Victoria knows more about the voting systems that they are using than the election board and clerks who run those boards.
It's usually after the fact we're mm-hmm. finding out what happens on election day, and that's unfortunate. I really do not have faith in the testing of these machines. I do not have faith in the testing. I have tried to come to terms with open source code, and I just can't do it. Open source code, in my mind, is not going to save us. What would save us is hand-counted paper ballots, at the precinct.
Oh, how quaint. I mean, Victoria, come on. We're living here in the modern age. I'm just upwind from Silicon Valley. You know, everything is computerized now, and you want to go back to the Stone Age? You want a horse and buggy approach to our elections? I mean, come on, what do you want? Confidence in the outcome?
Well, sometimes old-fashioned is better.
Yeah. Well, and you know, this does tie in, and this is something that Brad has talked about on many occasions. We have this sense of urgency that's driven by the media, that we've got to know the results by election night, by, you know, 11 p.m. local time. And we learned the hard way in 2000 that the world doesn't come to an end, the nation doesn't crumble, when we don't have the outcome, you know, within 12 hours of the polls closing. It's better to get it right than to get it fast and get it wrong.
And not to mention...
I'd like to say just...
Let's give Brad a comment. Just a second, Victoria. Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, let me just throw this in real quick. Not to mention what Victoria is talking about when she talks about hand-counted paper ballots. This does not necessarily mean we are going to have to wait all that much longer. You know, when it comes to precinct-based hand-counted paper ballots, each of the precincts are small enough that it does not take all that long to count the ballots at the precinct that night, on election night. You know, mm-hmm. and you can still have the results in short enough order. So this is one of the misconceptions when people talk about hand-counted paper ballots. You know, they think that we're talking about, a months-long process to do this. That's not the case.
Victoria, quick comment. I'm late for a break here. Go ahead.
Okay. I only wanted to say that it is our job to get it right election night. And if I have to repeat that, you know, to everybody I know, I will say it again, get it right election night. And the government needs to realize and come to terms with the fact that elections belong to the people, and elections should be, by their very nature, decentralized.
Go write that song, Victoria.
Thanks, Victoria. And a shout-out from Hal at KRXA. He loves your music and plays it regularly.
Well, thank you, Hal.
All right, Victoria, thanks for calling in today.
Okay.
We'll continue in a moment with his Bradness, Brad from bradblog.com, right after this late break on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
And a very pleasant good evening to you. Let's take a look at the very latest. And we're going to talk a little bit about it's a Santa Cruz problem. It's Highway 1 southbound, the Morrissey on and off ramp shut down, and the off ramp's closed 24 hours a day. We had a word of a crash, but looks like CHP saying it's now cleared. Also want to mention some rather slow traffic. And we had it southbound 1, stop and go from out of Santa Cruz into Capitola, and no other details regarding that. No stalls or crashes reported there to speak of. And our crash we told you about, we're going to get to that. But, however, CHP has just cleared it, so we are going to mention this report is brought to you by Welch's 100% Grape Juice. The American Heart Association recommends a diet rich in antioxidants. So where can you find them? Welch's 100% Grape Juice. It's full of natural, protective antioxidants. That's traffic on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 8 minutes away from the hour. And Brad Friedman with me from bradblog.com. So far, Brad, we haven't heard from Emily Levy. So if there's a way to flash her and ask her to call in pronto, feel free to do that.
I have been trying to do that. I'm not sure what happened there, but if can't get her, maybe we can get her next week. But we're trying to get her on the background here.
All right. And Mary emails from the Rockies. She says, hello again. I want to let you know that this hour every Friday is my TGIF moment.
Oh.
With a glass of Shiraz to help the medicine go down. She says, I'm wondering if Brad has ever talked about the voting systems here in Colorado. Last November in Denver, it was a disaster, thanks to technology and self-appointed experts gone nuts. At least at my polling place, I had the choice of a Sequoia versus optical scan. Now, that was easy. But Denver was a meltdown zone. I recall that vividly.
Not only was it a meltdown zone, but just prior to the election itself, the voter action lawsuit that was filed there led to the decertification of all voting systems in Colorado, although the judge said we can wait until after the election to review the systems because the election is 6 weeks away or whatever it was. But one of the things that was revealed in that stunning case in Colorado was that the certification process in Colorado essentially, and I'm really not exaggerating this, but essentially consisted of a guy who was assigned to open the boxes, make sure the machines turned on and off, had all of the their manuals in there, and he stamped them as certified by the state of Colorado. Now, to make matters worse, that guy, and I'm forgetting his name here, he had no formal computer science background, and he was appointed to the job by the former Colorado Secretary of State, Danetta Davidson. I say former because now Danetta Davidson is in charge, is the chair of the United States Elections Assistance Commission, appointed by George W. Bush and overseeing the federal certification of every system in America. Have a good weekend, Colorado.
Another glass of Shiraz, please.
Yes.
Very interesting. Brad, in the absence of Emily Levy's report, what do you know about the hearings today on the Holt Bill, H.R. 811, that were held in Washington?
Well, there seems to be a lot going on. Amongst them, Deborah Bowen, our own Secretary of State that we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. She testified today. And apparently she was the headliner, as far as everyone I've talked to out there said she was just remarkable. And one of the things that she talked about was her plans for California and the fact that though there are grave concerns about using optical scan machines, for the moment, while this system is in transition, to say the least, that it's an acceptable, for now, compromise because at least you have a paper ballot with every vote cast that is actually tabulated and that you can count not only on election night, but you can go back and count in a thorough audit. As well, Charlie Crist, as we mentioned, the Florida governor, the new Republican Florida governor, also made a very good impression, I'm told. Other folks who testified would include Noel Runyon, who we spoke about, the blind technology activist. Mm-hmm. I hear he did very well. And for the first time, I think, in Congress, they had a blind disabled voter there saying, no, we need an immediate ban on this DRE technology. He testified. People for the American Way testified, and I haven't gotten to read their testimony yet. I look forward to that. May have a report on it next week, the way things are going.
Yeah.
And Rush Holt himself actually testified. My feeling is there's a lot of concern and a lot of confusion about this bill, not just concerning whether it will be amended to include a DRE ban, but getting a lot of pushback overall from a lot of the elections officials around the country who don't want to part with their systems and, frankly, don't want to put them under the type of scrutiny that would actually happen even with the Holt bill as is.
And Brad, not to just pucker your bum, but why haven't you been called to testify?
Well, thank you. I sort of got thrown off by that phrase. You know what? I don't know why no one has. I'm just a blogger. I'm just a blogger. Yeah. That's all I can tell you. I'd be happy to testify anytime anybody wanted me. And, well, we'll see. Maybe that will happen someday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back here testifying on the Peter B. Show and on the Brad blog every day.
And you don't even have to raise your right hand here.
That's right.
Quick report on Ohio and Jennifer Bruner.
Oh, another remarkable story that's going on, and I was going to mention it while Victoria Parks from Ohio was on the line. Probably not time to do the story justice, so check out bradblog.com for the details. But in the wake of the recent conviction of two election officials who were found guilty of rigging the 2004 presidential election, in Cuyahoga County.
Cleveburg. Yeah.
That's right. And a new criminal investigation that was launched this week. It appears, as we saw in Arizona, in Pima County, Arizona, that election results were printed out prior to the election, meaning early election results were printed out, highly illegal, and would allow someone, whoever printed them out, to target specific areas in last-minute get-out-the-vote efforts. Jennifer Bruner, the Secretary of State, has asked the entire Board of Elections to resign, and it's being fought by the Republican head of Ohio who heads that election board, and there's going to be much more to come on that.
All right, Brad, have a great weekend, and hold on a minute. I got something for you after the show.
Okay.
And we'll talk to you next week, same time, same stations. Have a great weekend. Visit peterbcollins.com if you dare. Thanks for listening.
Keep smiling. Pour me another tequila, Sheila.
Here's what people are saying about the hottest new show in town.
Joe, thank you so much for being here.
I want to wish you the best of luck with this. I think it's a great service.
Hey, drink up, all you people.
12-Step Talk Uncensored, where we take the shame and blame out of addiction. Join me, Sheila Gale, Saturday afternoons, 4 to 5. 12-Step Talk Uncensored. It's about time.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m., from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. The twists of truth surrounding the death of football star turned soldier Pat Tillman taking another turn today. CBS's David Martin breaking the news today.
It's been nearly 4 years since Pat Tillman was killed by friendly fire. And CBS News has learned an investigation by the Pentagon's Inspector General will blame 9 officers, including 4 generals, for failing to follow regulations and using poor judgment in a series of missteps that kept the truth of how he died from his family for more than a month. The official version was that the former NFL star had died in a firefight with the enemy, and it was only after a nationally televised memorial service was held for Tillman that his wife and parents were told he had been mistakenly shot by one of his own men.
Setting a date to end the war.
On this vote, the yeas are 218,
The nays are 212.
House passing the war spending bill, $124 billion, but the troops have to be home by September next year.
I'm Peter Mayer at the White House. The narrow margin, the 218 to 212 vote, is far short of what Democrats need to override a promised presidential veto. With that numerical insurance policy, the president wasted no time ripping into his opponents.
Narrow majority. And the House of Representatives abdicated its responsibility.
Describing the vote as political theater, the president said it has no chance of becoming law. But the vote moves the president and the Democratic-controlled Congress closer to a constitutional fight over wartime powers. Peter Mayer, CBS News, The White House.
Today, we finally learn exactly what it is that was killing pets across America and Canada.
Hymenopterin, which is a toxic chemical that's been identified as a rodenticide, although it is not registered in the United States. In cat food samples from Menu Foods.
New York State Agriculture Commissioner Patrick Hooker, an expanded recall of Menu Foods, the pet food product, today, and an apology from the company.
Some people may be satisfied with Menu Foods' apology and condolences, but Kathy Sterling says it won't bring back her dog. Sterling's 7-year-old Australian Shepherd Boomer had to be put down because of kidney failure, something Sterling links to Menu Foods.
I doubt very much that I will ever use a wet dog food again. It'll depend on how they handle the situation, but I highly